Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. How's everybody doing out there? I hope everybody's having a fantastic Thursday. It's over here in Northern California, the weather is much better. It's a lot more tolerant. It's not windy. It's not raining. It's not ugly. I'm pretty sure back in L.A. and SoCal for Gabriel Montoya, Mr. Dark Cloud, regardless of the fact that we call him Mr. Dark Cloud, it's pretty sunny out there. Right, Gabe?
Oh, dude, it's perfect. There's a little bit of a breeze. The sun is out. I was out earlier today kind of doing my thing. And yeah, it's just it's been perfect weather all this past week. I know the weekend was a little cold, but... You know, I didn't really care. I'll be down in San Diego, so.
Yeah, weekend was ugly and stuff, and didn't hear from Gabe until Tuesday, when he woke up from being under a coma from his birthday bash. You know, a lot of things here on Leaving the Ring to talk about. We got a great lineup of guests to come on. Hopefully, we were able to get everybody online with us here on Leaving the Ring. An astonishing upset. Between Sergio Thompson against Jorge Linares. Jorge Linares was going, and we talked about this last week here on Leaving the Ring. We were saying, you know, I said, I like the fact that he was taking another fight prior to going in with Antonio DeMarco, who had stopped him at the Staples. I believe it was on the undercard of the Hopkins and Dawson fight, right? And he goes out there, and he ends up getting stopped again due to a cut, but he just looked very uncomfortable with Sergio Thompson, who just basically showed him no respect, which rightfully that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go right after the guy that's supposed to have more skills. He's supposed to have accomplished a lot more. And, you know, I even tweeted out there, and I had a lot of response, people sending me either a response back on Twitter or they hit me back up on leavingtheRing@gmail.com. I put out there, I wonder how much of the wars that he had with Edwin Valerio, did it do a lot more damage than good than we thought it would? You know, I mean, you got in there with a big puncher. It just seems like more or less his career is just starting to spiral down. You know, I know some folks were saying it was premature, but just his body language alone, he just didn't seem comfortable, couldn't get himself set, couldn't seem to establish that jab to keep Thompson away from him. And it looked like any time Thompson decided to throw that right hand, it landed, Gabriel. I don't know what you saw or what your thoughts were about it. We're definitely going to hear what you thought about that fight. But I got to say, Linares definitely needs to go back and just kind of evaluate what he's been doing, what he needs to do. I know he's taking a script from Oscar De La Hoya, who was kind of chirping in his ear saying, new trainer, you need to get a new trainer.
You know, I think, the trainer's always the guy that gets thrown under the bus.
Right.
This is the first thing. I mean, I think the last fight with DeMarco, it was so close and he was doing so well early on. That, you know, like, I know when Ariza was on our show, he blamed the ref, he blamed it in the press. Other people said it, the Golden Boy was like, they stopped the fight way too soon. We don't agree with that. I mean, you know, you could see it when DeMarco hit him late in that fight, right before the fight was stopped, rather than coming forward, which is what Linares had been doing all night long. Suddenly his legs kind of gave a little bit and he moved back towards the ropes. He kind of capitulated. His will was broken.
Right.
Something was broken. And he gave in, cuts or no cuts. And, you know, anyway, that's a whole other fight. But in this fight, you see all the flaws. And so I think that's why the team stayed together, I guess, is the point there. You know, it's because you can hang your hat on, well, they stopped it too soon. We were doing well. Yeah, the fight was turning on us, but we could have made it through that last round, even though we couldn't stop that cut to save our lives. You look at this fight, though, there's all those same flaws that are there. And it was interesting, you know, I was watching Linares spar, not spar, but work out one day at a media day, and he was kind of just beginning back. But one, the cut still looked not fresh, but they didn't look fully healed to me. I was like, man, that looks like another month or two at least.
Right.
Healing before, but they went back to sparring a few weeks later. But also, he was just kind of working out alone. There was nobody standing behind him, watching him, adjusting him. And consequently, you know, I think because he comes with so many good tools and everybody was so ready to anoint the guy, he could move well, he could box, he's not afraid to bang. But they just kind of watch him, get him in shape, they game plan, and they assume that those skills would be fine this time around. But what I saw was the same mistake that I saw in the DeMarco fight. He brings his jab back lazily. It doesn't go to his chin. It goes to his chest. And
right.
It's not a very stiff jab. It's like a feeler jab. It's almost like Manny Pacquiao's jab in some ways. Kind of flick, 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 and you're looking to land that power hand or do a hook off of it. But it doesn't stop anybody in its tracks. It's not really a true weapon. And, I mean, I think as early as the first minute of the fight, Thompson was coming over the top with that right hand. But also what he was doing, he did it once in the first round or kind of extended, and then he did it again in the second. It was the same thing that happened to Kerman Cintron after he lost to Margarito, which is he got bum-rushed. You know, when you come back after that knockout fight, the next guy goes, I'm going to take this guy to deep water as fast as I can, jump on him, and see if I can't rattle him. And Thompson did that immediately, and then he did it again in the second round. And we'll get to ask him about it in a few minutes here when he comes on. But I thought that Linares didn't handle that very well. He looked rattled, and then he got, you know, hit with the right hand over the jab. It was lazy. I mean, it was a whole path he was setting. With
well,
there
was a lot. It was a lot more to that laziness jab that cost him the overhand right. To me, too, that there was one thing, and I'm pretty sure you noticed this as well, Gabriel, is that when he was being attacked, he did one thing that you're not supposed to do, which is back up in a straight line. He didn't try to pivot. He didn't try to, you know, maybe closing that gap so the punches come
exactly
behind
right.
him. He decided to go in a straight line, going backwards to avoid punches. And that's why he was getting caught every single time. And taking nothing away from Thompson, nothing away from him, because I thought he did an excellent job. He executed his game plan, which was attack. But those were wild throws at some times and some rates. He was throwing some wild shots, and they were catching Linares because of the fact that nobody's taught him, or maybe he just didn't think of it at that moment, you know, which is a big, huge possibility. But you don't go backwards. You don't go in a straight line backwards. You got to give angles. You got to move your head, you know. And you would think that a guy that's in the position where he's at and as many fights he's had and as much as people have taunted saying he's going to be the next big thing, he would have figured that out. It happens in boxing. Where does he go from here? We don't know. You know, Thompson not getting the shot at the title from the WBC and WBC saying no and deciding to put him in a different ranking. Some folks are asking us, what are our thoughts about Jose Suleiman's decision? In my truth. That's going to be his answer.
Yeah.
In my truth.
let me jump back to your first thing first, because the comment you made about, I did see that, him moving straight back. He doesn't move his head a lot. And he's kind of stiff. He's kind of an upright guy. When you hit him and you get all of it, you're generally, if you found the sweet spot to land that right hand, you're all good, because he's not going
right.
to roll with the punch. He's not going to kind of slip with it or anything. He barely even ducks it or blocks it. He kind of eats all of it. And, you know, good chin, bad chin, it just comes down to if you let people hit you that flush, you're going to go down at some point. It's going to have an effect. And I don't think the chin is all that great. And for me, it speaks to how we anoint people so fast in this sport anymore. I mean, Adrian Broner is already considered the truth, and I really think he's a very talented kid. But let's be honest here. We haven't really seen him in with a guy his exact, you know, his size that's prime and dangerous. I mean, we all liked Eloy Perez, and we all believed in him, but, you know, I mean, that story speaks for itself now. And when you looked at them, they really weren't the same size. And, you know, I have been on good authority, very good sources. They've turned down guys like Edgar Cherry for his next fight.
Huh.
When you're a champion, and you're supposed to be the heir apparent to Floyd Mayweather, and you're turning down Edgar Cherry after you get your belt and you're defending it on HBO, you kind of actually have moved out of the quote-unquote the truth file. You've moved out of that, and you're something else. We don't know what you are at this point. And I think Linares was exactly that. I mean, he got knocked out in one round by an unheralded fighter who's not done much since, you know, at the elite level. Hasn't taken out other big names and done great things. Why are we still talking about Jorge Linares as a top guy? Because he has good skills? I guess so.
Right.
What else has he done since then? Now he's against a DeMarco who, you know, it's funny that people talk about Edwin Valero and they say blown record and he wouldn't have been this good. I really do believe that he would have been that great. I think it would have been a problem for a lot of people.
Right.
He beat Antonio DeMarco. He gave Antonio DeMarco his first loss. It's his last win. Jorge Linares got knocked out by him. He got stopped by him. Not knocked out cold, but TKO'd and beaten down the stretch. Why are we talking about him as a pound-for-pound guy, as a great fighter? What has he done? He hasn't done anything. And now he lost to Sergio Thompson, ranked 16th by the WBC, who...
I think the whole thing is...
You're not even going to get a title shot out of this. That's how little we think of you. I mean, I know it's all politics, but...
Right.
So why are we talking about Jorge Linares as anything other than just another fighter?
Or is it
bad matchmaking?
It's bad, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's bad matchmaking. I think it's a lot of what you're saying. And I also think that a lot of folks jumped on that wagon of him being pound for pound because of the whole fact that he was with Freddie Roach and Freddie was going to correct this and Freddie was going to do that. And guess what? You know, not taking anything away from Freddie Roach, but not this just gives you the proof that not every trainer can make something out of a fighter. You know, they don't always are going to fit. The puzzles are not always going to end up being placed together correctly. There's going to be some off on it. And that's exactly what we saw. I mean, Manny and Freddie work well together. You know, doesn't necessarily mean that the rest of the guys that are walking into the gym, and I know a lot of folks, I've spoken to fighters are going, well, you know, my dream is to go to the wild card. And it's like, it doesn't mean that you're going to end up doing well with Freddie. His style of teaching fighters don't work. It doesn't necessarily work for everyone, you know.
Well, and I think also I agree with that. You know, and it's chemistry. It's like any relationship. You know, the people have to click. Like I've been watching over the past 2 weeks, Michael Katsidas and Justin Fortune worked together, and they'd worked together. I think back in 2008, they knew each other at the wild card. Maybe he'll explain their history when he comes on, but. You can see their chemistry together. Michael responds to him. He does things, for the most part, that Justin is asking him to do. Very simple stuff. You know, move your head, jab your way out of there, rather than always go with a wide power shot, you know?
Right.
Little things, you know, because, you know, Michael's not going to change all that much, but you can tune him up. And I don't really see that kind of – the wild cards become a bit of a factory, you know? Certain guys get handed off to them that Ariza moved Linares into his house and seemed to be the one that was kind of taking charge, at least the times I observed, kind of says it all to me, that Freddie isn't in there kind of fixing everything. I think they were just as impressed by Linares as everybody else was, but not really going in there and fixing the thing. But also, I think it does speak to the matchmaking. And all the trainers I talked to, all the boxing people I talked to this week, none of them, to a man, and a couple women, could not understand why Golden Boy, and this wasn't Eric Gomez, who's one of the matchmakers for Golden Boy, this was Robert Diaz, the other matchmaker, that made this fight. Why would you put a guy that had just been stopped in his last fight, that is looking at a rematch, a very lucrative, like I think it was $1 million, you know, fee,
right?
Not, you know, for each fighter, but to be split up among everybody. They were probably going to make $200,000, $250,000, maybe three a piece. Against Antonio DeMarco later in the year to kick off our summer. We just lost a really good fight here at the Home Depot Center down in SoCal. Why would you put him in with a guy that has 19 knockouts coming into the fight in 21 wins? You know, it doesn't make any sense. He'd never been stopped. He'd lost twice, but he'd never been stopped. There were competitive fights. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, you put him in there, and I know we'd probably criticize it, so they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. But
right.
You know, when you're looking at a title shot rematch that's going to be on the cable network in a good market, it's probably going to sell a lot of tickets. Why? Why do you put him in with a guy that possibly can punch I know his record might be built up, but I think we just found out it's, well, we don't know because Linares has been knocked out before. We need to see if Thompson is in against a guy with a good chin to see if he actually can punch. But kind of looks like he can. He certainly didn't show any fear in there.
Oh, no.
Why would you do that? You put him in with a, you know, exact record. Somebody said, like, 18 wins, 11 losses, and, like, 8 knockouts. That's the guy you put him in against.
Exactly.
You know, and none of those wins have happened in a while. It's a tune-up, just like Lycar Ramos went for Juan Manuel Marquez. You can get him to the finish line. He gets a little bit of confidence back. And then you put him in a real training camp to go after DeMarco. You don't put him in with a power puncher. You just don't. So it was a couple things. I mean, I think the trainer failed in fixing that right hand problem and the jab problem and the moving his head problem. And then the matchmaker failed in putting him in with somebody that was alive, you know, when you got all that money sitting there on the table. It was just kind of a group effort in failing him, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Let's get him on. Let's see what he's got to say. Let's patch in the co-host of Noche de Boxeo, George Jimenez, called Geo Image. What's up, George? Are you there, brother?
I'm here, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Great. George is going to be our interpreter tonight for Sergio, and he's going to be translating for us for the English-speaking listeners so that we know exactly what he's saying to our questions. So, hold on, because it's telling me to
get, call.
We have an invalid number here. Let me text Joe Sarate, who set this all up for us, and he'll let us know.
Speaking to your point about the WBC, I mean, we can get into that while you're looking for this number and tracking this guy down. On one hand, I kind of understand what the BBC is saying, like, you know, the 16 guy didn't just jump right for the title shot. But at the same time, why was he in an eliminator then? So basically saying, we sanctioned a guy that we all thought was going to lose to fight in kind of a ceremonial fight against Jorge Linares, not a real fight. The winner of, you know, it wasn't, you know, when you have an eliminator, and I guess it was a semifinal eliminator, not a final, double secret handshake eliminator, according to Suleiman. But when you have a semifinal eliminator like this, I mean, you would think that it's up for grabs, that the position to move towards that final eliminator and a title shot is up for grabs when the bell rings, sort of like when a championship fight happens and the bell rings, and nobody's the champion anymore. Whoever wins is the champion. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But at the same time, when you see the WBC, it does make a lot of sense because they're obviously a questionable entity, I guess we'll call them, for lack of more evidence. So they're going to do what they're going to do, and you know, hopefully.
My truth? In my truth?
Yeah. I always speak the truth.
In my truth. In my truth. Hold on, let me have a sip of my beer. In my truth.
If there was justice in the world, you know, the guy should get the title shot. I mean, he not only won, he won the score of the lottery. He knocked dude out. He stopped.
Hey, in a perfect world, yes, you're absolutely right, man. But this is boxing we're talking about, and
yep.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, he was set up to lose. I mean, that's the funny part about where you see promoters and you see the WBC, they start squirming around, you know, like worms or snakes or whatever you want to, you know, describe them as, and they start backtracking or they backpedal in things that they've said or have kept in promise. And this is just one of them. This is an eliminator. The guy wasn't supposed to win. Linares was set up for another great, a lucrative matchup with DeMarco, and it blew up in their face. And how do you fix it? By justifying, saying, well, we can't do this for this guy because he's really not even known yet, you know?
That's the thing, you know. At the same time, it's like, well, how does this guy – I just hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle. And they just kind of, you know, maybe they move him up a little bit and then nobody else wants to fight him or deal with him. I mean, if I'm a network and I see this guy fight, yeah, he's got 2 losses, but they were kind of along the way, you know, kind of a while ago. He just broke through, in my opinion. People want to see this guy. He's clearly an action fighter. And what's crazy about it, too, is that, you know, I've watched that fight a few times because it's so short. But Linares had him. He hurt him early on. And he couldn't finish. And the guy turned it around. I mean, it's an interesting little fight. I would like to maybe do a rematch at some point. But I don't know. I want to see Sergio Thompson back on TV. I think on some level, maybe even if we can't get justice from the WBC, maybe we can get justice from the networks. I'm not saying this guy's the next big thing or he's going to be a giant star or any of that, but when you knock out a guy like Jorge Linares, you should be rewarded on some level other than just your paycheck. We should get to see you again. And hopefully he doesn't, you know, go the Dmitry Pirog route and just start fighting in Russia all the time. We never see him again.
I have a feeling that's what it's going to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, he'll probably head back to Mexico, fight a few more times, which is what fighters should do.
Right.
I'm just hoping that I mean, he's definitely not going to get the opponent call anymore. That's going to be the hard part for him. You know, nobody's going to call him and say, he's got two losses and probably a built-up record, and then they go, oh, wait a minute, he stopped Jorge Linares. Well, maybe we'll get somebody else. That's going to be the interesting thing. If the networks are smart, they just got themselves a great B-side. You know, he's going to register with the Mexican fan. He's got a name win. You know, hopefully they pump him up. Certainly put him in with somebody else at that point.
Bueno.
Sí, puedo hablar con la socio.
Sí.
Sí, socio.
Bueno.
Sí, sí. Mi nombre es David Duenes, con mi compa aquí, Gabriel Montoya. Esa es la Living Ring Radio. Nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés y Jorge va a hablar en español, ¿ok? Okay. George, first off, tell him congratulations on his win Saturday against Jorge Linares, ¿ok?
Buenas noches, Sergio. Primero que nada, felicitaciones por tu por ganar y vencer a Jorge Linares. Y pues te queremos dar las gracias por estar en el show esta noche.
No, muchas gracias a ustedes. Gracias a Dios y a toda la gente de Estados Unidos que me siguió. Y bueno, muy contento, disfrutando de la victoria y preparando lo mejor para la próxima.
He thanks everyone and all his followers. And you know, he's hoping for the next fight, waiting for the next fight.
You know, my question first is, I guess everybody's wondering, his last name is Thompson. Where did that come about? How did he get that last name? You know, because it threw off a lot of fight fans in the beginning.
La primera pregunta es, se están preguntando sobre tu apellido, cómo es que tu apellido es Thompson, de dónde viene el apellido, porque ha tenido un poquito de, ha confundido un poco a los fanáticos del boxeo.
El apellido viene de mi abuela. Mi abuela llega a la ciudad de Belice cuando antiguamente Belice era una ciudad inglesa. Es de apellido en Thompson, nosotros venimos de Inglaterra. Y bueno, mi papá actualmente todavía sigue siendo beliceño. Y bueno, yo orgulloso de tener las dos sangres. Tener la sangre de México tanto como la de Belice.
He says that it actually comes from his grandmother who was born in Belize. And you know he he's Mexican and he's from Belize, so he has the two nationalities because of his father.
Okay. You know, now obviously he has kind of shocked the world. You know, Jorge Linares was supposed to go over there and handle his business and get his rematch with DeMarco. My question is going to be the fight plan that it seemed to me was not have any respect, any fear, and just attack him. It was that the game plan because that to us that looks like that it looks to us that's what it was for him to do.
Dave está preguntando que a ti te pusieron contra Linares para perder, o sea, no te daban a Linares como el favorito y pues le diste una sorpresa a todo el mundo, nos diste una sorpresa. Y la pregunta es, nosotros vimos que tú saliste a atacar desde el primer round y ponerle presión. ¿Ese fue el plan que ustedes trabajaron para pelear contra Linares?
No, efectivamente. Primero, efectivamente, yo iba de víctima, inclusive lo dije desde un principio. Ellos creen que yo iba a perder, que yo iba por orgullo, pero no. Yo creo que demostré, entrené para ganar, lo demostré y bueno, ahora sí que ustedes fueron los que vieron que yo tenía muchas ganas de salir adelante, mucha hambre, mucho corazón, y bueno, gracias a Dios las cosas salieron, y bueno, yo muy feliz con la gente de México, con las personas que hoy en día creen en mí a base de mi trabajo, y bueno, no tengo palabras para expresar la emoción que hoy tengo.
El plan de ataque, ¿ustedes trabajaron en ese plan o fue algo que tú, cuando empezó la pelea, decidiste de hacer?
No, al contrario, yo estaba un poco nervioso en la pelear en mi casa con mi gente, tanto con mi familia como con todo mi país y mi estado, que me agarró, que tanto quiero, me generó un poco de presión. Yo, el plan de trabajo siempre fue ir hacia atrás. Creo que cuando, en el segundo round, cuando lo empiezo a hacer, las cosas empiezan a tranquilizarse y a salir un poco mejor. Él en el primer round me agarra muy bien, me tambalea, pero gracias a la preparación física que tuve, me logro recuperar en pocos segundos.
He said that, you know, obviously he knows that he was supposed to be the victim that night, but he came very well prepared, and you know, he was a little nervous fighting in front of his whole crowd, and he said that actually the plan was to fight going backwards, and that, you know, he actually got hurt in the first round, but he came back strong in the second round, and you know, he started feeling a lot better, having more confidence, and he just kept coming forward.
Gabriel, Sergio, this is Gabriel Montoya, Max Boxing, and Leave It in the Ring. I just want to welcome you to the show and congratulations.
Gabriel Montoya te está dando la bienvenida al show. Él es un escritor para Max Boxing y para Leave It in the Ring.
I'd like to know more about you. You know, I don't even know how old you are. It doesn't say anything on BoxRec. How did you first get involved in boxing? Where did this come from, and how did you get to this point?
Gabriel está preguntando que quiere saber un poco más de ti, de dónde viniste, porque llegaste de sorpresa al mundo del boxeo. ¿Cuál es la historia? ¿Cómo empezaste en el boxeo?
Antes que nada, le mando un saludo a Gabriel. Agradezco la oportunidad de tener estar en el programa. Yo provengo de Chetumal, de la capital de Quintana Roo, donde proviene la gente maya, la gente que vive en la capital, que trabajamos de cosas exteriores al turismo, donde la gente es honrada, trabajadora. Y bueno, yo creo que de ahí proviene el hambre de Julio Thompson, una persona que empezó siendo nadie y que hoy en día que le gana a un grande, todo el mundo lo voltea a ver.
He comes from a city called Chetumal, which is in Quintana Roo, is in Cancun, and he's actually descendant of the Mayans, and you know, he's never had anything. He's very hungry, and you know, he just took advantage of the big opportunity they gave him against a pretty good fighter.
You fight very often. You had that loss in your second loss in late 2010, but since then you fought you know, now 8 times in a row. Do you attribute your that activity? You fought, I think, 6 times last year in 2011. To having you prepared for this moment, it didn't seem like you seemed very ready and not that tight heading into the fight.
Gabriel dice que él ha visto tu récord, ha visto que has peleado mucho y muy seguido. Me parece que el año pasado peleaste 6 veces y pues no has perdido en hace un par de años. ¿Crees tú que el estar bien activo te ayudó a venir bien preparado para esta pelea?
Claro, yo creo que la actividad me hizo no perder la distancia, estar siempre en constante entrenamiento. Yo nunca, no me gusta pelear sin haber entrenado antes, siempre lo hago con un previo entrenamiento. Y como tuve la fortuna de haber noqueado, hice 8 peleas el año pasado, tuve la fortuna de haber noqueado a 7, entonces, y fueron entre el primero y el segundo round, entonces, como no salía golpeado ni nada por el estilo, entonces podía al siguiente mes volver a pelear, entonces estuve en constante entrenamiento, y yo creo que eso es lo que me llevó hacia el triunfo ante Jorge Linares.
Yeah, he says that he definitely attributes the fact that, he came well prepared to, him fighting often. He said that he actually knocked out, I believe, 7 of his last 8 opponents in the early rounds, first or second round. So he said he really hasn't been punished a lot. He hasn't been worn out. So he's in constant training. He said he would not take a fight unless he's well trained.
Gabe, are you there? Did we lose him?
Oh no, I'm here. I'm here. The thing that really got me about that, about his record and looking back over it, because I think everyone underestimated you, is your first loss to Aziel Gonzalez in 2009. It was a close loss, and it looked like a fight that you should have won. But now I look, and in 2011, last year, in October, you knocked him out in 7 rounds. What was the difference? What did you learn from that, and how did you change as a fighter from that first loss to knocking him out?
Él pregunta que dice que peleaste con Asi González 2 veces. La primera vez dice que él te vio ganar la pelea, debiste haber ganado, y la segunda vez tú lo noqueaste. ¿Qué cambió de la primera pelea a la segunda pelea? ¿Qué hiciste diferente?
Existió indisciplina de mi parte. Desgraciadamente comienzo a entrenar en un gimnasio donde tengo todo de lujo, conozco a empresarios de Cancún, donde me empiezan a invitar a fiestas, comidas, me despego un poquito de los gimnasios, y lo último que me pasó fue que me metí al sauna a bajar, peleaba yo en pluma, me metí a bajar yo 2 kilos, yo realmente soy pluma, y para pelear con Jorge tuve que invadir 2 categorías. Entonces me meto al sauna y salgo y me baño y me da una gripa tremenda el día de la pelea. Y desafortunadamente pierdo contra Sal González y me quita el invicto. Pero bueno, es una persona que sé perder, que sé cuando perdí. Y si después vieron que yo perdí, pues bueno, yo sentí que la pelea la tuve ganada. Me sentí un poquito cansado entre el 5º y 6º round y ya no pude... Ya no tenía la misma precisión ni la pegada hacia los 10 rounds.
¿Y qué hiciste diferente en la segunda pelea?
La segunda pelea me preparé mejor. Tengo un gran equipo. Actualmente tengo 3 años y medio viviendo en la Ciudad de México, donde hay muy buen boxeo, hay muy buen nivel y sobre todo hay muchísimos sparring y peleadores. Y bueno, creo que de año y medio para acá, Yo he despuntado ante otras personas que yo he peleado.
He says in the first fight he was training in a gym in Cancun and it was a very fancy gym. He knows a lot of the people from the hotels. He was really not taking it serious. He was doing a little bit partying. And he said the biggest mistake that he made is he went into the sauna. And then right after he came out of the sauna, he took a shower and then he caught a cold. Once he caught a cold, he wasn't the same in the ring. He felt a little bit tired, a little bit drained after the 5th, 6th round. So it affected him in that fight. But, he acknowledges that he lost the fight. And if the judges saw a different fight or saw him losing, that he accepts that. He said in the second fight, he's training out of a gym in Mexico City. With a lot better sparring and taking it seriously. He's been there for the past year and a half.
When he came on first, he mentioned that the game plan was to, not attack. And then he said he got hurt in that first round. So when did he feel that he had Jorge Linares? I mean, and a lot of fight fans, there's half of the fight community believe that it was prematurely stopped. What are his thoughts? Does he feel that he was kind of robbed of possibly knocking out Jorge Linares rather than it being stopped on a cut?
Bueno, la pregunta de él es de 2 partes. ¿Me escuchas?
Sí. Dime la primera y te contesto la segunda.
Okay. Bueno, él dice que el plan tuyo cuando empezaste la pelea era de ir para atrás, pero ¿en qué momento tú sentiste que tú tenías a Linares en problemas?
Antes que nada, pues sentí, él me tira 2 jabs, cosa que trabajamos en el gimnasio, lo estudié bien, logro conectar a la derecha y veo que que realmente yo por naturaleza siento mi pegada que lo logro conectar con precisión, con muy buena puntería y fuerza. Y simplemente lo que hice cuando lo vi mal fue intentar rematarlo. Entonces ya no lo dejé escapar. Supe cómo definir el golpe que le metí, cosa que tal vez él no pudo hacerme en el primer round, pero bueno, gracias a Dios, a mí las cosas me salieron, lo logré, y hoy te puedo decir que para muchos logré la hazaña que nadie creía.
Bueno, y la segunda parte de la pregunta es, muchos de los fanáticos que vimos la pelea pensamos de que a lo mejor pararon la pelea un poquito antes y te robaron de tener un knockout impresionar con un knockout. ¿Qué piensas tú de eso? ¿Piensas tú que pararon la pelea muy antes o qué piensas?
No. Realmente he escuchado dos o tres comentarios de lo mismo. Simplemente yo no públicamente no quería opinar, pero pues ahora que tengo la oportunidad lo voy a hacer. A Jorge Linares del golpe se vio muy escandaloso, antes que nada. En segunda, cuando a él le toca ya ir a revisión médica, le dan 12 puntadas por dentro, porque tenía expuesto una vena, fue en el párpado, no un cabezazo como él dice. La gente que conoce de box sabe que un cabezazo siempre es horizontal y que por un golpe siempre es vertical. La herida era totalmente vertical. Te repito, le dan 12 puntadas por dentro y le dan 12 puntadas por fuera. Era una herida extremadamente peligrosa. Te digo que no sé cuánto tiempo pueda descansar, pero es algo que a la larga va a tener repercusión siempre.
¿Y tú te sientes contento de que la pelea terminó de esa forma o quisieras tú a lo mejor haberlo noqueado?
De cualquiera o una otra manera, cuando yo logro ver eso, yo ya estaba motivado. Te mentiría porque no soy adivino del futuro, pero yo creo que si me lo hubieran soltado, por supuesto que hubiera salido como un león a atacar a su presa y lo hubiera querido rematar en todo momento.
So I asked him the two-part question. The first question that was, what was his plan of attack? He said he basically studied tape of him, and he studied the way that he throws the jab. And every time he threw the jab, he came back with the right hand. And when he connected with the right hand, he felt that he connected with power, and he hurt him. And then after that, it was just a matter of keep trying to land the right hand. And he said once he saw him hurt, he just went for the kill. And then the second part of the question, as far as if was he happy with the stoppage, he said yes, he was happy. He said a lot of people don't know, and he says that Linares is a little bit crying, saying that it was a headbutt, but he says that people that know about boxing knows that a headbutt with the cut is horizontal, not vertical, and this was a vertical cut on his eyelid, and he said that it required 12 stitches inside and outside of the cut. So he says that he'll take the win however he wants. If they would have let him continue, he would have jumped at him and trying to finish the fight.
You know, it tells us how intelligent he is, because we talked a little bit earlier about Linares' jab and how he was coming over it. And also, I didn't think it was a headbutt. I thought it was from a punch. I also thought that, it was he overwhelmed him. My question with him is that, Is he a kept secret from Mexico? Because I got to say, when nobody knew about him, and he kind of came out of the scene the way Madonna came out when he had stopped Victor Ortiz. Is he in that kind of in that category? Yeah.
Él te da la razón. Dice que sí, que no fue cabezazo. Los que vimos la pelea vimos que fue un golpe. Y pues que dice que se nota que sabe mucho de boxeo, porque es exactamente lo que estamos hablando antes. La pregunta que él hace es, si tú crees que tú eres uno de esos secretos que nadie sabía de ti y de repente te dieron la oportunidad y saliste a acabarlo. Y te compara con el Chino Maidana, un peleador argentino que cuando le ganó a Víctor Ortiz, que salió de la nada y dio la sorpresa. ¿Tú te pones en esa misma categoría?
Claro, por supuesto. somos de los boxeadores olvidados, donde nadie cree en nosotros, y cuando tenemos una oportunidad, siempre así debe ser, saber aprovecharla, saber las oportunidades que Dios nos da, saber prepararnos, tener la conciencia que es una oportunidad que donde lo puedes tener todo o puedes perderlo todo. Y bueno, gracias a Dios, a mí hoy se me dieron las cosas. Hoy me preparé como nunca en la vida. Y creo que hoy todo el mundo me voltea a ver por lo que pude lograr. Gracias al entrenamiento, a la disciplina y al gran trabajo que tuve en esquina.
Yeah, he says that he's one of those fighters that was a forgotten fighter, but that when given the shot, he definitely took advantage of it and came very well prepared, better prepared than ever. And, you know, he thanks his team and his corner for helping him. And you know, he just had a great camp.
Sure did. He sure did. Go ahead, Gabriel.
This is actually a question off of Twitter. One of our listeners wants to know who the guy with the skull mask was that jumped in the ring as soon as the fight was over.
Él pregunta que, uno de los fanáticos pregunta que, ¿quién era el muchacho que entró con una máscara de calavera al ring?
Era mi promotor Pepe Gómez, al cual le mando un saludo también, que es el que he dado siempre en mi carrera. Es una persona que iba en representación a México, que llevaba la bandera con orgullo de todos mis hermanos mexicanos y toda esta raza mexicana que somos puro corazón y pura valentía.
He said it was Pepe Gómez. It's a promoter, and he was carrying the flag. And, you know, they're just very proud of their Mexican heritage and carrying the flag, you know, as high as you can.
Now, I'm curious, you know, the WBC has ruled it was a semifinal eliminator. They're now saying they're just going to give you a higher ranking. They're not going to give you the title shot. What are your thoughts on that?
Bueno, dice que después de la pelea se dio a saber de que la pelea no era para eliminatoria al título mundial, que el presidente Sulaimán de la WBC te va a subir en los rankings, pero no te van a dar el chance para pelear por un título. ¿Qué piensas tú de eso?
Realmente respecto a eso, estoy totalmente deslindado. Hasta donde sé yo, la oportunidad está. Estamos planeando la fecha, mi apoderado y el apoderado de Antonio de Marco, que es Antonio Lozada, y Terry Shaw. Y estamos confirmando no la fecha. Es totalmente mentira de que no es, la oportunidad no estaba así. Yo te puedo decir y te puedo asegurar que ayer comí con José Sulaimán y el gobernador del estado de Quintana Roo, quien ingresa, él quiere traer la pelea a México, a Quintana Roo, al lugar donde yo pertenezco, quiere que la pelea sea aquí, y te digo, nosotros tenemos planes, estoy totalmente confundido, igual ahorita que me lo dices, me quedo anonadado, y bueno, por lo que sé, querían que yo peleara con Yuroki Gamboa, pero te digo, te puedo decir que si mi organismo, que es el Consejo Mundial de Boxeo, que es el WBC, quiere que yo realice otra hazaña, créeme, que con el hambre que tengo lo puedo lograr.
He said he's a little bit confused. He actually had dinner with the governor of Quintana Roo and Jose Sulaimán last night, and he was told that they're actually working with the Marcos people, Lozada, on making the fight and bringing the fight to Mexico. So he's a little bit confused. He says it's the first time he hears about it, but as far as he knows, he's going to fight for the title. Another name that they mentioned was Yuroquis Gamboa, as a possible opponent, and he said, you know, he's ready for anyone, and you know, he'll try to fight the same way that he fought Linares.
So he does expect that he will have a big fight. That's interesting. We'll have to check with Jose on that. I got to know, how old are you? was he going to reveal that one, how old he is? Because it doesn't say on BoxRec when he was born. I'm just curious how much time he's got left.
Ellos están preguntando qué edad tienes tú, y también se están un poquito confundidos porque habían escuchado otra cosa de que la pelea por título no se daba, pero bueno, gracias por darnos esa noticia y solo quieren saber cuál es tu edad.
¿Cuál es qué?
Tu edad, ¿cuántos años tienes?
Ah, tengo 26 años. 26.
He's 26 years old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got plenty of time. I'll pass it on over to Dave. I'm actually pretty good with questions. I want to thank him for his performance. You know, a lot of guys get in for that kind of shot and they freeze up, and he went right at it. And to me, that's the heart of what boxing is all about. When the bell rings, everything's equal, and it's up to the man who wants it more. And you look like you wanted it more and that you planned for it. And I applaud the effort. Congratulations.
Gabriel te está dando las felicitaciones. Dice que la verdad te comienda por venir bien preparado a la pelea y por dar todo lo que diste. Dice que muchos que le dan oportunidades no salen adelante, no vienen con esa hambre de ganar. Y pues solamente son oponentes, pero tú claramente viniste bien preparado y con muchas ganas de ganar. Y pues te aplaude y te da las felicitaciones.
No, muchas gracias a ellos por tomarme en cuenta. Por personas como ustedes, es que cada día los deportistas se motivan más. De mi parte, voy a entrenar el triple para pelear con Antonio de Marco. Y bueno, solo nos toca esperar que llegue el momento indicado para que todos podamos disfrutar de esa gran pelea que de mi parte les voy a regalar.
He says thank you. He said it's a nice thing to say, for you to say, and it's just going to make him train harder. He's going to come three times as well prepared when he fights DeMarco, when he's going to give everyone the fight that everyone wants to see, which is a great fight.
You know, since we have him on, and not a lot of people know about him, and I got to tell you that seeing that fight, I want to see a lot more of him. But let's get a little bit into finding out exactly a little bit more about him, you know, that folks don't know. For one, sparring. Can you give us some names of people that he has sparred, maybe some familiar names of folks that he's got in the ring with and he's worked along the side?
David quiere saber en tu entrenamiento, ¿con quién haces tu guanteo? ¿Con quién haces sparring en México? Me dijiste que entrenas en la Ciudad de México. ¿Quieres saber un poco más de ti? ¿Con quién entrenas? ¿Cuáles son tus sparring, compañeros de sparring?
Sí, pues ahorita mi actual entrenador, que tengo ya año y medio con él, se llama José Luis Bueno, es un ex campeón del mundo también. Vivo en la ciudad de Neja, en México. Y esta pelea estuve boxeando con muchos sparring, un poco más altos que yo. Estuve sparreando con pesos welters para que el día de la pelea no sintiera yo la pegada de los ligeros.
¿Me puedes repetir el nombre de tu entrenador?
José Luis Bueno.
José Luis Bueno.
José Luis,
yeah.
Bueno se llama.
So that's his trainer, José Luis Bueno, and he says, you know, he didn't mention any names, but he's saying that he's sparring mostly with welters and guys that are taller than him, because he wanted to come, you know, he wanted to prepare for Linares' size.
Has he got in the ring with any, Mexican champions that we would know about, or maybe contenders?
Quiero saber si si has hecho guanteo con algún ex campeón mundial o campeón mundial o alguien que sea un poco conocido en México.
Sí, cuando yo empiezo mis inicios de boxeo, a mí me agarran de sparring de un campeón que se llamaba Rudy López. Sí, sparring también de Marco Antonio Barrera. Boxeé con todos los del gimnasio de Marco Antonio Barrera, inclusive hice una concentración en Big Bear, California. Y bueno, de ahí comienzan mis inicios y de ahí empieza el J.J. Thompson.
He said when he first started in boxing, he used to be the sparring partner for Rudy López, Marco Antonio Barrera, and he actually wasn't
Guti Espadas también.
Guti Espadas.
Oh,
and
wow.
He was actually in Big Bear with Barrera in training.
Well, there you go. You know, Jorge Linares had a lot of hype, a lot of folks that this guy figured that this guy was going to be the next big thing. And I'm pretty sure he heard the stories about Jorge Linares. What is his thoughts about him now? What does he think about him? Because obviously he studied the tapes, like he mentioned earlier. He figured out the puzzle. What does he take from there? What did he take from after the fight? And can he explain to us?
Bueno, él dice que tú habías escuchado de Jorge Linares que era muy famoso, que era lo nombraban como uno de los próximos grandes peso por peso. ¿Qué piensas tú ahora después de haber peleado con él y qué pensabas antes de pelear con él?
Pues, ¿qué te puedo decir? Yo sabía que iba con un gran rival. Yo siempre le tuve muchísimo respeto. Yo no llegué hablando que era una pelea de preparación, ni tenía planeado cosas más adelante, antes de Jorge Linares. Mi meta y mi paso a seguir siempre fue Jorge Linares. Y bueno, yo sabía que iba con un grande y que ganándole a los grandes es cuando uno puede sobresalir.
Yeah, he definitely didn't take him lightly. He knew he had respect for Linares before he fought him, and he wasn't looking past Linares. He was training for him, and he wasn't thinking, what was next after him. So he definitely didn't take him lightly.
I wasn't asking who he's thinking about next. I was thinking, what is his thoughts of him now? You know, I mean, of course, he's got respect for him. What is his thoughts of what people had assessed about Linares?
Él pregunta específicamente, ¿qué piensas ahora de Linares después de que ya peleaste con él?
No, como dije, él siempre va a ser un gran boxeador para mí. Él fue, gracias a él me motivé a entrenar como nunca lo había hecho en la vida. Ha sido la única persona que me ha puesto mal arriba del ring. Y merece respeto por la trayectoria que tiene. Y le mando un fuerte abrazo y que bueno, ni modo, es un deporte de contacto donde somos dos y que siempre uno tiene que ganar. Y afortunadamente fui yo y le deseo que de verdad, de corazón, que él pueda salir adelante a pesar de haber tenido una derrota contra mí.
He said, you know, he still has respect for him. You know, he thinks of him as a good fighter. You know, he obviously respects his promoter. And, you know, he's just saying that he could still do something big, even with his loss. And he has a lot of respect for him because he believes that he was the only man to hurt him inside the ring. So, you know, he's sending him a shout-out and, you know, kind of telling him, keep your head up and you'll be back.
All class, man. I really appreciate that answer. Sergio, thank you again for taking the time to speak to us. I know it's almost close to 8 o'clock where he's at. And I also want to thank Joe Serrate for setting this up. Sergio, please again, whenever you want or whenever you have a chance, call in, speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. We're very appreciative that you took the time to speak to us. And again, congratulations on your win over Jorge Linares.
Bueno, David, te quiere dar las gracias por estar en el show con nosotros. La verdad te desea lo mejor y cuando quieras volver, esta es tu casa, acá te podemos, te volvemos a invitar y te desea lo mejor en el futuro y que sigas para adelante.
Muchas gracias y primeramente Dios, cuando le gane a De Marco, ahí voy a estar con ustedes en su programa y en vivo, agradeciéndole todas las buenas intenciones que tiene conmigo. Muchas gracias y que Dios los bendiga.
Muchas gracias. He says that after he beats DeMarco, he's going to be there live giving us a shout-out, and he'll definitely be back, and he thanks us for having him on.
Awesome. Okay, gracias. Gracias mucho.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Sergio Thompson here on Leaving the Ring with us. Loved his answers. I think very humble guy. Definitely, he gave us, I think, every answer to our question. Jorge Jimenez with us. George Jimenez. I don't know why I'm saying Jorge. George Jimenez with us on Noche de Boxeo. Because even on Noche de Boxeo, he doesn't say Jorge. He says George. And, George did a fantastic job with us. He has done translating for us here on Leaving the Ring. He's the photographer for Leaving the Ring and Undisputed Fight Magazine. If this is the first time you're hearing George, you can tune into the Noche de Boxeo every Monday night at 5 p.m. And 8 p.m. East Coast time. George, thanks again, brother.
Not a problem, man. Anytime.
All right, bro. I'm going to put you back on hold, man. And I think we're going to be having our next guest call in a short bit, or Ross Gable's going to be calling him in. Michael Casitas. Everybody likes Michael Casitas, man. And, you know, the second coming of Arturo Gatti, that's how a lot of folks, you know, would call him. This guy's all fight, always in a brawl, and never quits. He just keeps coming forward, and takes punches after punch, and he has an exciting style, and a style, a fan-friendly style, TV fan-friendly style that we all like to tune in and watch, no matter what. Even if we know he's not going to win, you always sit back and you go, man, he might win this fight. You know, the Casamayor fight was a fantastic fight. It was back and forth war. The guy, I don't think the guy's ever been in a bad fight, Gabriel. What do you think?
I know, he's always out of action, dude. And watching him spar has been really fun. I mean, he's just...
Oh, I bet.
You know, he has other gears, but he doesn't like them. You know, he just likes to go. And it's just been fun having him around the gym. You know, I generally am there training. I can train odd hours, but I've now started to gear more towards Michael's hours just so I can watch him work and kind of... What I love to watch about fighters is watching the progression through a camp, watching the first few sparring sessions, and then you kind of come back a few weeks later, watch the middle, and then you watch in the lead up to the end. They're coming down the stretch now. Some of the harder sparring I think will be done. Some of the hardest sparring I think peaks out tomorrow, and then it'll all be, you know, just gearing towards the fight next week.
Right.
But yeah, he's never a dull moment with him, and he's really fun around the gym. He's a real funny guy. You guys will get a chance to see him here on the show. But I thought it was kind of funny that Sergio Thompson, all class, and it's just a nice story. He told Benares to keep his chin up. It's like, that was kind of the problem. He keeps his chin up.
You caught that too, huh?
It's like, maybe he should, you know, chin up, you know, hands up, chin down, you know?
Yeah.
But, I thought that was cool, though. And
chin up, hands down, and don't back up. How about a little bit of that?
How about move your head, for God's sake?
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that in his own story, here's a guy that kind of got built up in his mind, like, I'm undefeated. Like, you know, this guy's 6-10. I'm at this nice gym. Everything's kind of cushy. He fell into that trap, even being down in Mexico, where we don't think of it as cushy. You know, for him, it was. And
no,
he's
in Cancun. I mean... The guys in
Cancun,
that's a party town as it is, you know what I mean? I mean, if you've never been there, I've been there a few times. I love Cancun. And, Jesus, how can you train in Cancun? Seriously.
Yeah, it's like training in – guys are like, I want to go to Miami to train. Why, you know, I mean, dude, really?
Yeah.
It's you know, come on. It's just party central. But what I loved about him is that he grew. And we all passed it by. You know, that's why I always kind of laugh at the idea. I remember I did a video with Ellie the first time that he interviewed me, and he put underneath it, you know, boxing expert. And he introduced me as a boxing expert. And I told him, like, there's no such thing as a boxing expert.
Right.
There's a fighter that understands it on a level that you don't. There's a trainer that's probably been through that same experience and now is a trainer. But there's really no experts. And everybody kind of overlooked this guy. I mean, the matchmaker should have looked at that simple thing that I explained during the interview. This guy lost to somebody that was 6-10, and then a bunch of fights later, he fought him again, and he knocked his ass out in 7 rounds. What does that tell you? This guy has made a change in his mind and gets it, that you got to work hard. You got to be prepared for everybody, not just the, you know, the top-level Jorge Linareses, but the 6-10 guys. That guy is a dangerous man. When somebody figures it out like that, you got to be aware of them. I don't think anybody's going to sleep on this guy again. And again, I'm not saying he's the next superstar or, you know, he's going to beat them all. We really don't know enough about him. But I know that little bit about him. That makes him a problem. He's somebody that mentally gets it. And this game is very much a mental one.
Oh,
and if
definitely.
You know, getting in shape, all that other stuff is just stuff you sprinkle on top in a lot of ways. You know, like one guy said to me this week, a fight person, we were talking about a prospect, and he said, look, this is the bottom line. I can't want it more than you. And obviously Sergio Thompson gets that. And Linares, you know, didn't want it as much as him, didn't fix his problems, was in that cushy kind of gym. And now you see the result.
I won't sit back and say Lenoris didn't want it as much as him, but the truth is this.
He didn't fix the problem.
He didn't fix the problem because, you know, no matter how – look, you can have all the gifts in the world, okay? It's obvious that, you know, Gabriel Montoya is a very gifted writer, but you have to have guidance. You have to have somebody that could sit there and kind of guide that gift and give you direction. And if you don't have any direction, guess what? It's all over the place. And Jorge Linares, to me, is a gifted kid, but he needs somebody that sits on the outside. And I've said this numerous times. When you have a trainer is like in the football ring, the tower coaches, the guys that oversee everything that's happening above the field. You have your on-field coach, and that's the fighter that's in the field. He's doing the thing. But then you have your tower coaches that see everything, and that's what he needs. He needs somebody to give him guidance, to guide those gifts, to help him out a little bit, to see the things he can't see because he's in the mud. That's Jorge Linares' problem.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I mean, he seems like a class guy. Like, I'm not, you know, he's very talented. I mean, you watch him.
Very talented. But, sometimes talent just can't get you by. Especially if you get a Thompson in front of you who's determined, who obviously is an intelligent fighter because he saw the jab. He knew exactly, so he jabs first and he comes back with the right. He knew what he needed to do. And then he adjusts. He figured out, you know what, his game plan was the backup. And then he figured out, you know what, I could step on the pedal here. I can bum rush him and I can close the gap because there's something here I can take advantage. And that's an intelligent guy. He understands the game. He understands how to make those adjustments on the fly. Even though you have talent, even though you have all these things kind of mustered up and around that says that you should be the it factor, sometimes that it is just not enough. You need to have that happen.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and I think, like I said, it was a group effort here. There's a fighter that doesn't have a trainer that's looking at him going, you know, that jab is going to be a problem. That you're not moving your head well is going to be a problem. You know, you open the right hands, that's going to be a problem. The trainer kind of failed him. Not kind of, he did. I mean, you know, but I think more than anything, they had this guy. I mean, he got knocked out in one round. They bring him here, and they haven't really, in my opinion, brought up, you know, this should be like 6 or 7 fights. It's like the Golden Boy just wants to get to that big name fight. Let's get the title. And let's make this guy a star. They don't slow cook these guys. He got knocked out in one round. You got to take a long time bringing him back. You got to find out where that flaw was and fix it. You know, and maybe ultimately you can't fix his chin. Maybe this is just who he is. But I think it was really, like I said, a group effort. The fighter only knows what you tell him. You know, most of the guys we talk to, they don't, you know, watch a lot of tape. They let the trainer handle that. The trainer watches them. They trust that trainer to give them the instruction because they know they can't see what they're doing. They rely on everybody around them.
And I always think that's the worst thing you could do. You know what I mean?
Well,
unfortunately,
it depends. I mean, if you have good people, I agree with you. I think you should watch tape of yourself. Katsuda's all of his foreign sessions on his phone. He has somebody hold the thing and make sure that they get everything that he's doing. And then he goes home and he studies what he's doing. That's a diligent fighter. And make sure to get my feet. You know, make sure that I can see everything so you can fix it. I agree with you, you know, but I think there's a triumvirate here. There's three things that have, you know, three groups that have to work together, the matchmaker, the fighter, and the trainer. You know, I think on the ground level, the promoter is going to do what they're going to do and try to rush you. But if you can get those three people kind of on the same page to build this guy and to be truthful, to see him as he really is, not the hype and look at all these skills, but this guy's got a chin problem. Kind of got a defense problem. We need to bring him along slowly so he doesn't get knocked out again. They didn't do that this time. They really failed him. They didn't fix his flaw, and they put him in with a guy that was a danger, and look what happened. We're real curious to see how they bring him back, but you know the things that we keep criticizing Golden Boy for are just evident, and I think they're just growing pains. You know, sometimes they get it really right. Other times, it's just monumental mistakes. And it generally cost them their biggest name fighters. I find it, I don't know, it's just interesting to watch. See how they respond.
No,
I mean, besides taking my credentials away.
Right. we'll get into that another day. How about that?
Yes,
you know. Besides, it's good to have you, Michael Casitas, in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring. And
I'll find out what's going on. I'll be right back. Want to take a caller?
We'll take a few callers here really quick. CT, who wants to talk? Andy Lee and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now with us.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good, man. How you doing?
All right. I want to start off, I know I called in about the Chavez Jr. and Andy Lee thing, but I also want to touch on Jorge Linares a little bit.
Go for it.
I agree with Gabe and you guys. Definitely, he's definitely one of the most talented fighters to watch. It's just like, I agree. I think he just definitely has a chin problem. he has all the skills, but I don't know, something's lacking there. You know what I mean? He does everything well, but, you know, once he gets tagged on his chin, he just drops. that's something he's definitely going to have to think about if he wants to continue in his career. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lewis did it. A lot of people do it.
You know,
you can make through a long career with a questionable chin. I mean, even Felix Trinidad, who I didn't think it was questionable. You know, it was one of those wake up chins. You know, drop him in the second, he wakes up, and then he beat your ass. You know, it was only Hopkins that got him down late. It didn't even keep him there. You know, Ito did get to his feet. You can mash things. You can deal with certain things,
mm-hmm.
but you got to identify the problem. You got to figure out how to solve it. From that standpoint, all right, you're going to have to be a little bit less aggressive. How about not rush right into things and use your feet, use your jab. You'd be more of a, you know, look at, like, Paulie Malignaggi is a great example. He doesn't have a lot of power, so he's maximized everything else that he does. He uses his brain, he uses his feet, and he uses his boxing skills, to, you know, which includes his defense big time. He still can be in there and get in there because he has a good chin and he's a very durable guy. But his whole game is based around the simple fact that he doesn't have a shit ton of power. So he's going to have to be great at everything else. And that's, I think, what Jorge's going to have to figure out. I don't have a great chin. I've got everything else. How do I make this thing work? I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I know a few trainers that are really interested in looking at him, and that really tells me that nobody is ready to throw him on the scrap heap. But I don't think we should, you know. But
right.
Major changes need to be made. Major changes.
Yeah. About this, I'm very excited about the Chavez Jr. and Andy Lee fight. I almost thought, because Andy Lee was on Martinez's undercards for a couple of fights, I thought he was going to be Martinez's next opponent. But I really like this fight. I'm picking Chavez to win, but I think it's going to be interesting because I'm picking Chavez to win because of his pressure, and I don't think Andy Lee can handle pressure that well. You know, he's a pretty good boxer, but I was live there when he fought McEwen, and Kuhn was just beating the shit out of him for like the first eight and a half rounds. You know, he came back, he showed versatility, and, you know, he showed that he could take a punch. But there's something about Andy Lee's legs. You know, he's kind of wiry.
Weak?
it seems like Chavez is a little bit more physically stronger than Lee. I think he'll get to Lee late and possibly stop him or just get a unanimous decision. But I think it's an interesting fight because we've never seen Chavez take a punch yet. And Andy Lee had some okay power. You know what I mean? He has enough to get your attention. So I think it's going to be a pretty good fight.
You know,
yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that Andy Lee and Sergio Martinez, which I honestly think that you were right. I thought as well that Andy Lee was going to get the first shot at Sergio Martinez. You know, Matthew Macklin is with Lou DiBella, and we've told him here on Leaving the Ring that he can basically start a middleweight tournament with all the staple men on his stables. I think the reason why Andy Lee is getting a shot at Julio Cesar Chavez, and Gabriel can shine in on this one and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but this was the bait of having the chance of getting Andy Lee with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. to get Sergio Martinez in the mix. This was the deal, you know, put Andy Lee in, see how well he does, and then you get Sergio Martinez with top rank. I think that was part of the bidding and the purse.
Yeah,
yeah. I imagine that was something to it. You know, certainly. You know, it's kind of a two-for-one deal. I like that fight. You know, Martinez and Chavez Jr. and Lee. I think Chavez Jr. wins based on, you know, this his physicality. You know, he's going to be probably big again. You know, he's probably going to be in the high 180s again after weighing it at 160 or whatever, 159. And Andy just doesn't seem like he's that physically strong.
Right.
So just one quick update before I finish this point. Mick, he's returning late from training, so he should be calling in a few seconds or a few minutes. So anyways, so saying, I think that Lee, he's not very physically strong, and so I think he's going to get bullied back. He's got that kind of second-tier power. He can take out the second-tier guys
right.
with that power. At the elite level, I'm not sure. And I don't know if Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.'s chin is elite level. I know he took shots from Rubio pretty well. He did swell up pretty bad. We're going to find out. I think Lee's going to be able to hit him. But is he going to be able to? I mean, he did hurt McEwen late, you know, and finished him off. So I'm very curious about the fight. I just think he's going to get bullied around a bit. He just looks so skinny and like he can be pushed around, you know. He's a trip. I mean, but the skinny guys always have that kind of power, you know. Trinidad was like that. Tommy Hearns was like that. I'm saying he's in that league, but the body kind of shows you that, you know, he's definitely got like that kind of puncher's body. He's not really huge, muscled and tight and bulky because of that. He's kind of long and lean and it's those quick snap shots. But I'm still going with Chavez Jr. And it is weird to me to start picking him to win, but he's slowly getting better. I think they're matching him perfectly. Andy Lee's no defensive genius. But, you know, and I've yet to see – I've been talking about Andy Lee with Manny Stewart since I've been a writer. He has talked about this guy endlessly, how great he is in the gym, how he was the ring king there at the Kronk when Jermaine Taylor first arrived to that gym. Yeah, and Kermit Cintron, too. They had to get through Andy Lee. Vladimir Klitschko had to deal with him. Here's Mick Katsidas. So I'm very curious in this fight. I'll be right back, gentlemen.
I just have one other question. Is the Daniel Gill, Dmitry Pirog fight signed?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The Daniel Gill and Dmitry Pirog fight, is it signed yet?
I'm not sure about that. I would have to find out, but I'm not really sure if he is. It is signed.
Okay, yeah, because I like that card and the undercard with Austin Trout. I think he's a pretty good fighter. He's fighting Genzirik. I think that would be a good fight, too. I hope he gets signed.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You know what I mean, brother? Hey, thanks. Quick, CT, I'm going to put you back on hold because we're going to get our next guest on. Don't hang up. I'm going to put you on hold, okay, brother?
Thanks a lot.
And then we're going to be waiting for Gable here with us on Leaving the Ring. Hopefully he has Michael Casitas. Gabe, you there with us, bruv? If not, fight fans, call in 347-215-7598. Definitely can call in and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, or Gable Montoya. And if not, if you want to ask some questions, you can hit me up here on Twitter or Facebook. Or you can hit us up at leavingintheringatgmail.com. Somebody's as far as people that don't follow me, retweet me the most. Sweet Boxing, Ryan Bivens. I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't retweet you. Sorry.
You don't retweet me.
No, Sweet Boxing put down as far as people that don't follow me go, you retweet me the most. I'm kind of lost in what he's saying. Well, this is the guy that got upset about the word journeyman, you know?
Oh, well, you know, I don't know what to say to that. Mick is, we're working it out. He's coming back from the gym. I guess it was a hard one today. He's still going to be on the show. He's just coming back from the gym, so we're working it out. We're going to try to move him in somewhere in there and reschedule him inside this show. So we will have him. It's just going to be probably a little bit later.
Let me ask you about Arthur Abraham that fought this weekend as well. What were your thoughts about it, man? Because I'm still sitting on with Kelly Pavlik and him possibly going at it, you know. I'd like to see the fight.
It's a really good fight still. I mean, not for – it's not an important fight. It's not a
– No, it's just, you know, it's just throw it together. You know what I mean? Just put it together out there.
Yeah, I would like to see it. I don't know. I mean, I think he's pretty done, but, you know, Abraham, but at the same time, he's still got power. He still has willingness. I think he can, now he's going to make for some action fights. If you can get in there and get him to bang a bit, hope get him to come out of that tortoise shell. I don't know. I wasn't, you know, completely turned on by the fight or anything like that. I wanted to see it because it's Abraham. But him versus Kelly Pavlik, I mean, ever since you mentioned that to me, I think it's a hell of a fight and it's one that I want to see. But I don't think that he's going to be an elite-level guy at 160. I know they're talking about trying to get him a title somewhere. I'm like, didn't we just do this dance, you know, over the last 2 years? He's not really a true 168-pounder. Or either that, or everybody that does have a title is shown that they're better at you, than you at this weight. But can he do some marquee names? Can Pavlik be built towards that? Absolutely. Where would they do it? I don't know. You know, I don't think he's going to leave Germany. He tried that dance as well and didn't do so well. So it's going to be interesting. I think maybe they're just padding the old bank account right before he retires. I mean, that's the only reason I can see him fighting at this point. I know he's got a lot of money. So we'll see.
You know, there's that old saying, man, there's never enough. There's just never enough. And you know, going back with Kelly Pavlik and even with his performance, me personally, I thought there was a little bit more bounce to his legs. Was there enough to have an assessment of saying, okay, this guy, you know, blah, blah, blah? No, there wasn't. I thought the shot that landed on the guy that he was facing, Mr. Jedi, was first off, come on, man. Why do you want to name your nick? Why do you want to give yourself a nickname, Jedi? I was just thinking, you know, I don't think the guy really wanted to fight. I think he felt Kelly's power just a little bit, not enough. Felt it enough to say, you know what? Let me go back to the hotel room. Let me walk around. Let me have a good time, and I'll fight another day. You know, so it didn't put a whole lot of what Kelly was doing, where he's at right now, being with, you know, Robert Garcia, being in Oxnard, California. But it definitely showed me he's got a little bit more bounce to his legs. I saw him kind of a little bit more excited. I don't know if you got that or you were able to see that, but to me, I had the feeling that he was just a little bit more excited of being back.
Well, hang on 1 second. I'm sorry. I'll be right back. I'm dealing with our possible surprise guest. Just 1 second, Dave. My bad.
No problem, man. And Fight Fans, you want to call in right now, 347-215-7598. Tell me what your thoughts about Kelly Pavlik. What did you think? And, am I wrong about that? I mean, I just kind of saw that there was a little bit more excitement to him, a little bit more bounce to his legs, and there's a possibility that he might have just a tad spark of him being somewhere else. Maybe getting away from Youngstown and going to Oxnard, California, being with Robert Garcia, gave him an extra boost. I don't know. Arthur Abraham, him, I think it makes a good mesh. Why not? We've been wanting to see it. It's not an important fight, like everybody said. You know, Gabriel, my co-host, saying right now, it's not an important fight, but it'd definitely be a fun fight. It definitely find out where is Kelly Pavlik and where is Arthur Abraham. I think we can more or less know where Arthur Abraham is at 168, but we like to find out a little bit more about Kelly Pavlik. Gabe, you back with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm still working that thing out. It's not quite worked out, but we'll find out in a bit. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. Let's take some Fight Fans calls here. They want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. And then hopefully we'll have our next scheduled guest with us so we can talk to them about their upcoming fight, Michael Casitas. Let's go with Emmy Carr, who wants to talk. Yoroki's Gamboa. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
I'm good, man. How are y'all doing today?
Doing fantastic, brother.
Good to hear, man. I just have a question. What is happening with Gamboa, and who do you see as his possible future opponents?
Good question, man.
Gamboa?
What's going on with Gamboa? You know, I don't know. I don't even think Gamboa knows what's going on with himself right now at the moment. Opponents, the best possible opponent that he could have gotten, right now in his career, he skipped. He skipped town. I mean, I would have loved to have seen him get in with Dornier, but now that's a Top Rank fighter now. I think he kind of burned his bridges with Top Rank, you know? I mean, he was supposed to be in the meeting with Top Rank, and he skipped that too. So, Gabriel, what do you think? I mean...
Oh, I got Katsidis here. I'll be right back.
You got Katsidis? Gabriel, you have Katsidis? I think we lost Gabriel here for a short bit.
This is like chaos. Just don't ask me any questions. Katsidis is going to call me in 2 minutes. It was his manager letting me know that, or his assistant letting me know that he'll be calling in like 2 minutes. With Gamboa, who's he going to fight next? Top Rank in a lawsuit in court. That's pretty much what he's doing. I don't see how he gets out of it. You know, it seems like I can't really say what the evidence is. I've been told what some of the agreements that they have, or they think that are locked, you know, really locked in with Gamboa. But I'll let the court handle it. So I just think, I don't even want to think about him as a boxer right now, to be perfectly honest. I think he's going to be more of a defendant, you know, at this point. There's really no future there until he finishes up, you know, his deal with Top Rank. I think that's just what it comes down to. And really, how are the networks going to have any faith in Yuri Gamboa? You know, you get to the final press conference or the beginning of the press tour in a city that you requested, and then all of a sudden you just disappear. And he's made another meeting, apparently, with Bob Arum that he just didn't show up to. Who knows what's going on with this guy? I wouldn't bank on him to make us a sandwich, much less make a fight at this point. That's, you know, he's kind of lost any good faith because of me.
That's just a completely perplexing situation. I don't know what he was thinking. And, you touched on it last show. I mean, these Black Cuban fighters struggle enough to get their fan bases, and to call out a guy higher weight class, then say to you don't want the fight. I don't see him fighting anyone anymore like Nonito Donaire now that he's called out a lightweight. I just don't get it. Quickly, though, before you take your next call, who are you guys picking for the Butte Frosch fight?
Oh, I like this fight. I really like this fight here, man.
I really like this fight.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, I like...
I'm back, Dave.
I hate to say it, I like Frosch a whole lot. You're back with Katsidis?
I am here with Michael Katsidis, the great, as he is known. He'll be fighting in Las Vegas next weekend on the Friday Night Fights at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, against Albert Mensa. Welcome to the show, Michael. Thank you so much.
Let me put our caller back on hold real quick. Call, please don't hang up because I want to answer your question. But let's get the great
I'll
Michael.
Be here on hold.
Okay, brother. Let's get the great Michael Katsidis here with us. Hey, welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. You know, I've been wanting to get you here on Leaving the Ring for quite some time. You know, a huge fan. Mentioned earlier, when have you ever been in a bad fight? I don't think any of us can think of one. I mean, you're an all-action fighter.
Well, thank you very much. You know, like, it's my pleasure, and I enjoy fighting. And, you know, look, if a guy doesn't deserve to be in there with me, I won't carry him. I get in there, and I get in there to do the business.
You know, that's an old saying that we hear in boxing that you know, a guy that likes that's in the wars, that gets in, it's all action. If you don't punch him in the face, they're insulted. Do you feel like that? Do you feel that like that at all?
Well, I mean, I guess it's, you get a bit of a wake-up call. Sometimes that's necessary for some fighters. You know, because, you know, the fighter is born within someone, and, you know, it's often just you get a good whack and you're like, okay, now the fight's on. You know, like, nice guys out of the ring, but when you're in the ring, you got to do the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, cuts, blood, guts, and glory with you. When did you figure this out in your career that's what you're all about? I mean, warrior, I mean, you know, sum it up, folks like to compare you to Arturo Gatti. And yes. And there's a reason behind it. When did you figure out, look, I'm all balls and I'm all guts and I'm all glory?
You know what? This might sound crazy, but I was actually 7 years old. I was watching Apollo Creed fight Rocky Balboa. And then it went on, and Rocky Balboa beat Ivan Drago, and I said, I want to be a champion. I want to be just like that guy. For the first 15 fights of my life, I was called Rocky. That was my name. And then when I came over to the States, that's when it turned into Katsidas the Great. So I would say that image, that warrior thing, was sort of instilled in my mind from when I was 7 years old as an actual fact.
Wow.
That's funny.
Because one time everybody wanted to be Rocky, you know what I mean? The only difference, Michael, is that when I got punched in the face, I got in the fetal position, so I wasn't Rocky.
it's terrible, right, guys? Like nobody likes it. Look, I hate training, I hate work, and I actually don't enjoy it when I'm in there, but it's that feeling at the end of the fight when he goes, I love you, you know, and he says at the end, and he just feels so great, and that's what I feel like when I have a win, and that's what I'm aiming for. So I think that time's just about due for me come Friday the 13th. I'm really looking forward to this fight.
But you've changed up training camps for this. You decided to come work with your fellow countryman, Justin Fortune, which is interesting because you guys are opposites. He's kind of a dour guy, and you're very bright and happy guy most of the time when you're not hitting somebody. How did that come about? How did that relationship begin?
Oh, well, you know, he's Australian. You know, I think, you know, a lot of Australians are generally that way, you know, from my opinion. you know, we're good blokes. But, look, me and Justin, you know, we mesh well, and he's got more hands-on experience and more training experience than anyone I've ever known. Like, he fought Lennox Lewis, and he trained Manny Pacquiao for 7 years. He trained Manny Pacquiao through all the tough fights. You know, it's like he's the ghost, because I never really hear him get recognition for training Manny Pacquiao. I mean, Freddie's done a great job as well. I mean, don't get me wrong there. But like Justin's got, you know, I've questioned some things Justin does, and now I can feel the improvement from training with him. And he just says to me, 15 world champions, brother. And I thought, okay, he's trained 15 world champions, so he's doing something right. And not only that, the guy, he's fought all of his life as a heavyweight, and he's no taller than me. So that style is something just exactly I'm going to be able to do when I'm fighting at the junior welterweight now.
Is it mainly, you know, obviously you've got your mindset and a strong work ethic, definitely, just watching you, you know, and trying to train next to you. What does Justin bring to the table besides all that experience? Is it, at this point, just kind of tuning you up, changing little things here and there?
You know, I've been in a lot of wars. I've had a lot of battles, and, you know, I fought all the greats. You know, you have Juan Manuel Marquez, and, you know, I had him on the back when I was just close to beating him. You know, it was right there, but I just couldn't beat it. You know, just couldn't get over the line. You know, there was a few occasions. Casamayor, I had that one in the bag as well. But, you know, I've got a very good work ethic. You know, I've been very fortunate to be training with Brendan Smith from Toowoomba, you know, throughout a lot of my professional career. And then I believe that Justin can put the final polish on the end there that I'm going to need, and to make that final difference that I'm going to need to beat these guys at the top. And look, there's a lot of great fights out there.
Is this kind of the back end? I mean, you're 31. Mm. You seem to be a pretty realistic guy. Is this the back end of the career?
Well, you know, if you were talking to Marquez or Pacquiao, I think they'd be pretty offended right now.
Very true.
You know, but like he's 39, Casamayor, I mean, he's done. But, you know, these guys, you know, they go on. And some people have the head for it and some people don't. You know, I've been fighting since I was 11 years old. And you know, this fight coming up will be a deciding factor for the remainder of my career, because I am 31. Whether I can carry that strength. I've found that in my later years here now, guys have been able to stand up on the ropes and take my punches. I don't believe that will be the case come Friday the 13th. Now, fighting at 140 pounds, I'll be able to demonstrate the strength that I carry into the ring.
You're big guys, too. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to mention to Michael was that a lot of fight fans right now on Facebook and on our email and on Twitter, they're just basically, they want to just relay a message to you, which is thank you. thank you for the way you come in. Thank you for the way you fight. And pretty much thank you for always just leaving it. You know, you always want to kind of leave it in the ring, which is what we model ourselves here on the show, the name of the show. You don't want to leave it with the judges. Let me ask you something here about Robert Guerrero, who was a guy that you got in, a guy that decided to go toe-to-toe with you. Sometimes, Michael, do you sometimes think that maybe you're a little too gutsy? Maybe you should do a little bit more boxing than decide to try to knock somebody out?
Well, first of all, thank you for those comments at the start. That made my heart very warm. That was thank you. It's good to be appreciated. As far as Guerrero is concerned, you know, yeah, there is a couple of things there. Like, I was a guy that, you know, kept coming forward, and I was that guy. You know, that guy who just kept on coming straight, didn't change his angles, didn't move his head, and I'd just be right in front of him, and it was just a typical thing, get a rangy guy and move off on the angles and then wait for the... That seemed to become, like, you know, the way to beat Katsidas. You know, but that's not the case anymore. And then in saying that, in my defense against Guerrero, the only reason why I took that fight is because I believed that I could knock the guy out. But you know, I had no sparring for the fight. I suffered a cut early on in the camp. You know, but like I'm not one of those guys that carry excuses around. So, you know, I've got to make these final changes. That's another fight there where if you look at the fifth round of that fight, I hit him a couple shots to the body, Guerrero bent over, then I went two shots to the head, and then the referee stepped in and called it a low blow. That was not a low blow, but after that it was a low blow.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, there's a lot of things in these fights. I believe that was the point there where I was meant to win that fight. And there's a lot of things in a lot of fights where, for example, if Marquez stayed down when I dropped him in the third, you know, we wouldn't be having the same conversation now. We'd be looking at different things. So, you know, this is why I reiterate it's very important. I'm here with Justin. He makes the final touches on it. And, you know, I'm here. I'm in America. I'm living the dream. I'm doing what I love doing, and I'm going to make the most of it.
Have you always been, you know, I've just been watching you spar over this camp. Have you always gotten in with guys that much bigger than you? Do you prefer that, or is that something that's risen as you've risen in weight?
Say that again?
Like, you've sparred a guy that's like a 160. You've been sparring a welterweight kid that's really tall.
Yeah.
Have you always sparred guys that were bigger, or have the guys gotten bigger as you've gone up in weight?
You know, I don't know. Like, I mean, the guys that I have been pretty big, the guys that I've been fighting lately.
Yeah.
Look at Roberto Duran. I think everybody has different body types. I believe there's a bit more science over here now. But the first day I walked into the Fortune Gym here, Justin said, okay, what supplements are you taking? And what were you doing in training? And he's made all these changes. He said, look, this is 2012. You've got to get with the program. You know, the people that you're fighting, you know that they've got double the recovery time. They've got more oxygen in their blood. You know, things like that, and they're moving off on their angles. They're not just standing in front and going all out like that. You need to make a few changes, and these are the adjustments I think is going to make the factor. I've just finished off doing 16 rounds, just playing around, just enjoying what I'm doing in here, and I'm finished. And just as I made this call here today, I was looking on things. Geez, I'm looking in good order right now. And, you know, this is probably, you know, the first time for a while since I felt really good before a fight. So, you know, I'm talking the talk here, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to the fight coming Friday 13th.
I think you look sharp. And to that point, you look healthy. Like, most guys are weak out for making fights, you know, or making weight, rather. They don't look good. And you look happy, you're in a good mood.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of energy.
I always get along with all the guys, you know, like at the fights, you know, outside of the fights, and then when it comes like a week out, like I was biting at the bit, I'd chew nails, you know, I didn't want to talk to people, and, you know, because I was really struggling to get down to that weight, but now I feel good, and I think that's going to be important carrying in a clear mind into this fight.
One of the things Justin told me about you, this will actually lead into a question, was the day you landed, I think, or thereabouts, you called and said, you know, I want to come down to the gym and train.
Yeah.
And you ran from, I won't say where, because I don't want people to know where you live, but it was pretty far away from where the gym is, like maybe close to 10 miles, 7 miles.
Well, Well, I said I was coming, but like I think it was a few weeks ago. I was telling him, I said, look, I'm not going to have a car because I've just got there. I'm on foot. And then I asked him where the gym was. He told me, and I put it in my phone, and I was like, oh, okay, this is 16 miles. No worries. So I ran the training. You know, I turned up and did it. He goes, where do you live? Oh, my God.
So the question is, I mean, is it's been – you have to work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, that was the first thing. He just, the first thing is working. I said, you got to fix that. It's something that can be fixed. They say you can't teach old dogs new tricks, but, you know, there's a few adjustments you can make, and that I'm hoping, no promises, but, like, I'm really hoping this is going to be the case, and we'll know. A statement needs to be made on Friday the 13th.
What do you know about this guy that you're fighting, Albert Mensa?
Yeah, look, he's a WPBF world champion. We're not fighting for that title. We're fighting for the IBF international title. Look, a lot of the African fighters, this guy's from Ghana, there's not a lot on them, really, like, especially if they're based out of there. He's only just of late been based out of America, so there's not a hell of a lot of footage on him, but he's got an impressive record. Like, you know, he's only had two losses. He's an experienced guy, so I'm just going into this fight for, hey, you know, I'm going to be fighting the best out there, always have. It's not going to make a difference. I'm going out prepared for, you know, a tall, rangy fighter. I can expect, you know, he's going to get on the run at some point. He might try and put me on the back foot, but, you know, I'm happy if he wants to stand and fight. But I'm expecting that he's going to want to move a box.
And the Ghana fighters are a trip. I mean, like, people look at his record and they see your marquee name and they see his three losses and they'll go, oh, well, this is just a setup fight. But if you look deeper, they almost are brought up like Mexican fighters, the Ghana fighters. They kind of turn pro early. You learn on the job, and they're rugged dudes that are hard to knock out.
Yeah.
Do you expect a long fight? Because his losses were way early in his career. They don't even really matter at this point.
I think they're slow starters, and I think they, like, you know, who knows? You know, but look, I'm prepared for the 10 rounds, and, you know, it's going to be a healthy 10 rounds for me because, you know, I feel strong. You know, like before, I felt like I was punching myself out right at the start, and I was tired all the way through. That won't be the case. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm probably going to be heading out for the fight. I think maybe with you guys. I'm not sure. Jensen's going to strap me to the hood of his car or something. I've been through the whole process kind of just watching you guys, and I don't, it's exciting. There is a difference, for me anyways, watching somebody that's been in with a lot of people. You know, I watch all level of guys at that gym, amateurs, guys like me that just like to fight or like to train, everything, you know. But then we see a guy like yourself, and there is just a next level kind of feel, you know, watching you work with these guys. It's been a pleasure, man. I really appreciate you being so cool and letting us all kind of watch.
Thank you. And that's why I love doing what I do. So thank you for those words.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, before the great came out of you, was there anybody in there that you felt like, man, this guy is all guts. I got to, move up to his level. I got to surpass this guy, you know, because the way you fight is like a fearless style. There's got to be somebody out there before you kind of found that style, mostly in the ring, that you kind of measured yourself, which you had to surpass.
Back to the Rocky thing. can you look at it any differently? Like, have a look at my fight. Get on the YouTube, check it. Katsidas first Graham L, check it. Katsidas first Cesar on one side, Katsidas first Amonta. I mean, that one was like the fight of the year. You got the Casamayos both from the fight.
Right.
Look at those fights. Like, is there anything different from that as opposed to Rocky versus Ivan Drago? I mean, like, seriously, there's like, I think I've gone on all guts and balls here with these fights. You know, a lot of it's heart and, you know, hard work. Of course, like, you know, I've had great training and had a great career with Brendan Smith. But look at those fights, and then I think you'll relate to it. It's like a movie.
That one, especially with the blood, with the Manta fight, was...
Like, I've never been cut in my life in that fight. I got 27 stitches. So I guess some, you know, people like blood. So when they watch me fight, they see a lot of blood. You know, it's just a cut.
I think you like blood too, though.
Like just again, put a Band-Aid on it, you know, to be right the next day. She's all right. But, you know, 27 stitches is a bit different. But, like, it's only a cut, you know. You're not going to bleed to death there. And then there's doctors ringside. I mean, God, you know, come on, guys. You know, like, it's, yeah, no, if this is what you do, that's what you got to expect. So, you know, people look forward to seeing that.
You know, with being with Justin Fortune, what are some of the things? What are some of the keys that you feel that you're kind of getting now? I mean, I know you've been with them, but in the past, but
yeah.
At this moment right now in your career, you know, like you mentioned, you know, you said that old dogs can't be taught old tricks, but you're feeling like you're learning these tricks, but you won't know until fight night. But what do you think? What are your thoughts and what are your feelings?
Yeah, look, you know, you can't teach them new tricks, but you can make adjustments. There's little things, you know, that you can change. Like, it's just quite simple things to remember. You know, like when you throw a combination move off, don't just stand there in front of the guy with your hands down. Stuff like, and it's just things that I just kept on doing in the fight. No matter how many times you can get told, you know, you still keep on doing the same thing. But, you know, the way that I've been taught here and the way that I've been training with it, I've got it down pat, and I'm at the age where I can think inside there now more. I put it down to a lot of it with the weight. I'm struggling with the weight, so I'm looking forward to getting there. A new Katsidas, you know, that gets in their fights and I can think and refreshed. You know, like I'm really looking forward to bringing yet again something new into the sport. So I'm really looking forward to it, and hopefully I can please everyone like I have before.
I'm
looking
there
forward
you go.
To it, man.
Absolutely.
It looks like he's excited for it, so he's coming, right?
Yeah, without question, yeah.
Sure.
It's
sure.
going to be
sure.
an excellent fight, and it's a Katsidas fight, so it's all action. I think the last fight I was there for was, unfortunately for you, it was the Katsidas or the Casamayor battle, which was just a tremendous, tremendous fight. I think every time people get a chance to see you live, they really should, because it is an experience. Not everybody gives what you give, and that's what makes you. You know, so thank you again for coming on the show, man. I'll see you at the gym tomorrow.
Yep.
All right then, man. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Bye.
That's Michael Katsidas, who will be fighting on Friday Night Fights next weekend at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Stopping by to share with us. That is hilarious. The Rocky thing.
It is.
Was Rocky.
It is.
I think that's the funniest thing I've heard
in a while. You know what's funny is that I don't know if a lot of folks remember this. I mean, because you know, we're a lot older than a lot of our listeners sometimes. The action figures. You know, remember those big old G.I. Joes? When they made the Rocky, the big old, you know, 12-inch Rocky figures. And, hey, yours truly had to go out there and buy them. And I used to have, you know, Major Wars. I used to have major wars with my action figures. That's about as far as I got, though, Gabriel. Not like Michael Casitas here. Decided to test it out. To be, see if he could be like, you know, Rocky Balboa.
That fight, the Amonset fight, if you can find that on YouTube, it is, it's one of the bloodier fights I've ever seen. And it's just, it made fans of him out of so many people I know. You know, there's, wow, have you seen this? It's Michael Katsidas guy. And, you know, people sent me the fight, and it was just, like, unbelievable. You know, just the amount of blood and the fact that he fights through it. And you just got to love him for it. You know, and he is changing. You know, I didn't want to get too far into his game plan because I think they're trying some things. I'm very interested in what he's going to do in this fight in terms of if it goes long, working his way in and everything, using a jab, moving his head a little bit more. But this other fighter is like you said, it's kind of he's an unknown. He's a Ghana fighter, so we know what to expect. He's going to be tough. He's going to be a slow starter. He's probably going to have that shield defense and a good jab and a good chin. So it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm very curious. Just trying to work out. We're almost to our surprise guest. We're just making sure that we get our translator here all in place.
Let me You know what? Let me call in our translator and see. because I text him right now and he hasn't got back to me. For George. So let's let me call in George. Let me see if he'll answer the phone here. You know what? Okay, George just texted me right now. Let me call George in really quick, and then we can get in our surprise. Oh, he said he's on. He said he's on the list. He says he's on now. I don't see you, George. There he is. George, what's up, brother? Okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you again. From Noche de Boxeo, George Jimenez. And I hope everybody enjoyed the Michael Casitas, man, interview. Same thing with Sergio Thompson, who was hooked up for us. Who hooked it up is Joe Serrate, good friend of the show, and also a publicist for Leaving in the Ring. How you doing, George?
I'm great, man. Great interviews tonight.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. And if you guys haven't had a chance, and if you're Spanish speaking, you want to have some great interviews in Espanol, you got to go to Noche de Boxeo. I love the show, man. You know, I always have a chance. I always tune in. I don't get a chance to listen to it on live, but I always tune in at work, and it makes my hours go, the hours that it's on, it always makes it go by. Gable, do we have you back on?
I am here, and I'm here with a special surprise guest, the middleweight champion of the world, Sergio Gabriel Martinez. Welcome to Leave It in the Ring.
Hola, hola, ¿qué tal?
Habla, Sergio. Hola, hola, ¿cómo estás, Sergio? David Dueñas y ya tienes a Gabriel Montoya. Nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés y George Jimenez, él va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Perfecto, estupendo, aquí lo espero, muy bien.
George, first off, I want to thank Sergio again. He's been coming on our radio show for the past, I believe, two or three years. So we want to thank him for always returning back on Libre in the Ring.
Campeón, primero que nada, muchas gracias por volver al show Libre in the Ring. Ya eres habituario en este programa. Ya tienes como 3 años de estar en el programa.
Ah, muy bien. Muchas gracias. Es un placer que me llamen. Es un placer hablar con ustedes.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah. Now we mentioned this. Leading up to his fight with Matthew Macklin, we said that it's going to be a tough fight. I actually had picked that he wasn't going to knock him out, that Matthew Macklin was going to surprise a lot of fight fans. And the surprise was there. He was getting caught a lot. It seemed to me he was having a lot of problems. Can you explain to us those problems and what was going on?
Campeón, dice David que él fue uno de los que dijo de que Macklin no iba a ser un oponente tan fácil para ti como muchos pensaban. ¿Cómo viste tú la pelea esa noche? ¿Te dio problemas? Háblanos un poco sobre la pelea.
Bueno, bien. También sabía yo que Macklin no iba a ser un oponente fácil, pero probablemente fue una de mis mejores peleas, por lo menos en la sensación que tuve, ¿no? Tuve la sensación de poder controlar de principio a fin todos los movimientos y todas las distancias en las que peleamos. Así que creo que fue difícil, pero fue una de mis mejores peleas.
He said he also knew going into the fight that it wouldn't be an easy fight, but he feels that it's one of his better fights because he dominated from the beginning. He did what he wanted to do in there, and he felt pretty good in there.
I didn't think he dominated. Honestly, I got to be honest with them. I'm going to be very truthful with them. I didn't think he dominated. I honestly thought that he was having a lot of problems. But I knew that he's consistent. And I also knew that because a lot of times in the beginning when we have watched, he's kind of tired out. But since he's became champion, he's really stepped up. I mean, stepped up to the point where he doesn't tire out anymore. So just go ahead and let him know about that. I just want him to know that. I didn't think he dominated, but I think that he obviously showed that he's a world champion, and this is the reason why he's the middleweight champion of the world.
Bueno, David dice que él no pensó que tú dominaste la pelea de principio a fin, pero sí pensó que que fuiste muy consistente en la forma que peleaste y que mostraste que eres un gran campeón y cerraste la pelea bien, pero no te vio dominando. ¿Qué piensas tú de eso?
Bueno, pues es parte de una estrategia. Para mí también es parte de una estrategia darle movimiento y trabajo a McLean. Ese trabajo que él hizo fue un trabajo de desgaste. Entonces, bueno, también que digamos que produje yo ese desgaste en McLean, obligándolo a trabajar. Y hay veces que de trabajar puede ganar un round, puede ganar dos rounds, pero yo sabía que McLean no iba a terminar en pie. Yo sabía que cuando iba, antes de que finalice el último round, iba a noquearlo. Por eso digo que iba manejando yo. Por más que él ganase uno u otro round, no hay problema. Pues es un trabajo de demolición el que hice.
¿Piensas tú que él te dio problemas o fue, como dices tú, fue la táctica que tú usaste para desgastarlo?
No, problema no. Fue una táctica, una forma de estrategia que utilizamos con mi entrenador, que planificamos y que claro, pues como te dije, no importa a veces que McLean gane uno o dos rounds, lo importante es quién gana la pelea, ¿sabes?
Yeah, he definitely reconfirms that it was a tactic that he used to wear McLean down. He feels that maybe he didn't dominate, but there was definitely that was the strategy to wear him down, take him into the later rounds, and finish him. You know, he doesn't feel that McLean gave him problems. He says that it's not the guy that wins one, two rounds, or three rounds, it's the guy who wins the fight.
There have been some people, Sergio, that have been critical of the fight, saying that you struggled or that you'd been exposed. I don't necessarily agree. I'm curious how he feels about that criticism. And looking in a larger sense, you look at the top pound-for-pound fighters, you're the only one on a four-fight knockout streak. How does he feel about this criticism? Does he think it's warranted?
Bueno, muchos de los expertos que vieron la pelea, o sin nombrar nombres, te criticaron bastante, te dicen que no luciste muy bien en la pelea, pensaron que a lo mejor estabas bajando un poquito de calidad. ¿Cómo te sientes tú sobre esos comentarios?
La verdad que a mí no me dio ningún comentario de eso, la verdad que no me dio, y lo digo con total sinceridad, no me dio ningún, pero totalmente sincero, ningún comentario de eso. Al contrario, la sensación que dejé yo fue la misma que vieron muchos, y es la de manejo en el ring como o sea, manejé la situación en el ring como yo quise, ¿sabes? Entonces, pues la verdad que si hoy alguien me dice que no lo hice bien, pues que me dé las explicaciones y no hay problema, lo hablamos, pero vamos, que probablemente para mí fue una de las mejores peleas, ¿sabes? No tuve ni un golpe recibido en mi cara, ni un golpe dramático, ningún golpe de peligro de McLean. Estamos hablando de un título mundial, y el rival mío no pudo conectar ningún golpe y salió completamente destruido. Entonces, pues, quien vea lo contrario, pues lo siento, pero yo lo veo de esa manera.
He said he wasn't aware of any comments or negative comments about him. He definitely feels like he was the better man that night. He said that if you compare his face to Macklin's face showed the wear and tear during the fight, after the fight. And he said, you know, if anybody is saying that he didn't look good during the fight, that maybe they need to explain it to him.
I would agree. I'm curious, in the fight, after that knockdown, you seem to go into a champion mode and a gear that Macklin has. Did that wake you up and say this fight might be closer than you thought?
Él dice que te da la razón de que lo hiciste bien, y dice que después del primer knockdown, tú te le fuiste encima y mostraste la calidad de campeón. ¿Cómo te sentiste tú después del primer knockdown?
Bueno, sentí que era el momento en que buscar la definición para demostrar a McLean que ahí estaba yo presente, digo, que ahí el campeón que yo y que ganar por knockdown. Ese es el momento ideal para atacar.
Hear a lot of echo. He says that he wanted to show Macklin that he was there and that, you know, he wanted to finish him and definitely know that you know, he was a champion and you know, he didn't go anywhere. He was present.
You know, I want to first tell him that I'm a little upset that he took my body. He used my body on the ESPN body, and I wasn't happy about that. I'm just kidding. Go ahead and tell him that, though.
Was that the magazine?
That was the magazine, yeah.
David dice que está un poquito molesto contigo porque usaste el cuerpo de él en la revista de ESPN y que no le pediste permiso.
Hicieron un buen trabajo de Photoshop, es decir, un excelente.
They did a good job in Photoshopping.
They did. We announced you having you were a surprise guest. We didn't announce it, and immediately a lot of women are they're so receptive to him. How has that changed? I know that regardless, but you know, this guy obviously had no problems getting women, but now getting the fame, how has it changed him? Has it affected him? And did it affect him? Because there are some people that think that it has affected him, and that's why we saw some of the results with the Macklin fight.
Bueno, él dice que ahorita nadie sabía que tú ibas a estar en el show y apenas anunciaron que ibas a estar en el show. Las mujeres están volviendo locas, están mandando mensajes. Quieren saber cómo te ha afectado la fama y si tal vez... Pues algunos de los críticos, la verdad, dicen que a lo mejor eso es lo que no te hizo lucir bien, pero bueno, ya tú nos explicaste que esa fue tu estrategia, pero ¿cómo te ha afectado la fama?
La fama, no creo que sea famoso yo, la verdad, no. La fama es algo efímero, ¿no? Es algo que para mí, según mi punto de vista, pues que no existe, va, qué sé yo, no sé, yo no sé a qué le podemos llamar fama, ¿no? Pero vamos que... No sé, sinceramente no comprendo muy bien la gente que por ahí es conocida, pues hace que se olvida de quién es realmente, ¿no? Se olvida de su propia identidad, pero vamos, que en mi caso, pues bueno, yo sigo siendo el mismo tipo de siempre. Yo no sé quiénes son esos que critican, a ver si dan la cara algún día y me lo dicen de frente como corresponde, ¿sabes? Yo no creo, vamos, tengo 37 años ya, no soy un niño para creer en cuentos de hadas ni en Santa Claus.
Well, he feels he's saying that he's still the same humble person, that he doesn't feel that he's famous, and you know, he just doesn't feel like that. He doesn't know where that comes from. And also to the people that criticize him, you know, he wishes that they will just come forward and you know, tell him he doesn't feel that he's slipping. He said he's 37 years old. You know, he doesn't feel old.
Just to let him know, we don't think he's slipping. You know, we've honestly feel that he's one of the best fighters in the world. But these are the questions that honestly the fans want to know, and we have to ask. So we just hope that he doesn't feel disrespected. And I have a follow-up question to that, okay?
Bueno, él dice que la opinión de no es de nosotros, son algunas de las preguntas que llegan por internet y que nosotros pensamos que eres un gran campeón y que no has mostrado ninguna seña de que te estás envejeciendo ni de desgaste, simplemente son preguntas que llegan del público.
Claro, no, sí, yo entiendo, por eso digo yo que pues la gente pues por teléfono es muy oculto tras un nickname de internet, es muy fácil criticar o buscar los errores en alguien, ¿no? Sin dar la cara, pues yo digo, pues mire, yo subo un ring, doy lo mejor de mí, y hoy en día estoy entre los tres libra por libra, ¿sabes? Y para eso, pues, yo no sé cómo explicarlo. Yo hasta que no sea el mejor, pues no me voy a considerar un gran boxeador, ¿sabes? Solamente un gran, sí que me considero un gran trabajador.
No, he said he definitely understands that it's not our opinion, and he said it's very easy to criticize when you're online behind, you know, hiding behind a nickname and, you know, on the phone. You know, he definitely feels that he's one of the best three fighters in the world, pound for pound, but he's not going to stop working until he's the best pound for pound, and you know, he's just he's going to remain humble and working hard.
Jose Suleiman said that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. will beat you here on Leaving in the Ring. What is his thoughts?
Bueno, el presidente José Suleiman de la WBC dijo acá en el programa de que aseguró que Chávez Jr. te va a ganar. ¿Qué piensas tú de ese comentario?
Bueno, bien, pues es una opinión y la respeto, ¿no? Por supuesto, como corazón, como la de cualquier fanático que me diga que puede ganar Junior o puedo ganar yo, lo respeto, por supuesto, como la opinión de todos, no hay problema.
He said he respects his opinion like any other fan that will come up to him and say that Junior is going to beat him. And, you know, he just respects his opinion. That's his opinion as a fan.
I know you have to get going here, Sergio, and I really thank you for coming on, but I just wanted to ask you a couple more things. One, can you tell us what's going on with the plans to fight Chavez Jr.? Have you signed? Is that deal in place with the promoter or just with the WBC? And do you have plans to fight between now and then?
Bueno, dice que gracias por estar en el programa, que él sabe que te tienes que ir muy pronto, pero te quería preguntar sobre la pelea de Chávez. ¿Firmaste ya para pelear contra Chávez? ¿Cuál es la situación? Si nos puedes hablar un poco de eso.
Sí, bueno, ayer a las 7 de la tarde, aquí en el aire, donde estoy todavía, firmé el contrato y ya lo enviamos, así que esperamos que le llegue a Tocán, que le llegue a Chávez, que le llegue a Andy, sí, a todos los que tengan que firmarlo, porque yo sí que ya lo firmé, ¿sabes? Estoy esperando la pelea de Chávez y Andy Lee, en la que voy a estar presente, y nada, solo esperar el ganador enfrente conmigo.
He said he signed yesterday, I believe he said it was at 6 p.m. that he signed. The contract was sent to Top Rank, and he hopes that it gets to Chávez and he gets to sign it. And he's going to await the winner of Chávez and Lee, and he's going to be there pressing, watching the fight.
Well, there you go.
So there's not going to be an interim. I guess that's the answer. Let me ask one thing not boxing related. I know he does a lot of charity work. Did he want to speak to that at all, to some of the work that he's doing, or let us know anything that he would like us to be aware of in terms of the work that he does?
Una última pregunta. ¿Tú vas a pelear antes de la pelea con Chávez o vas a esperar?
No, voy a esperar hasta al 15 de septiembre a enfrentarme con el ganador de Chávez y Andy Lee. Todavía no se sabe quién gana de esos dos. Así que quiero esperar a esa pelea y ya con ese combate ya estoy tranquilo.
Y bueno, y si nos puedes hablar un poco del trabajo que tú haces, que no tiene nada que ver con el boxeo, si quieres hablar un poco, contarles a los fanáticos sobre eso.
Bueno, ¿qué tipo de trabajo? Lo de en contra de la violencia doméstica, en contra del bullying. Si quieres, le puedo contar un poquito de eso.
Sí, exactamente eso.
Ah, perfecto. Bueno, mire, estoy por Estados Unidos y parte de Latinoamérica. Estoy interiorizándome y hablando con las asociaciones de las que trabajan en contra del maltrato doméstico, ¿no? En contra de las mujeres maltratadas. Y luego estoy tratando de dar charlas, de hablar, de dar meeting, de dar charlas, y de tratar de colaborar en todo lo posible, en todo lo que se pueda. Trabajo muy muy difícil, es muy duro, porque hay muy poca gente que trabaja en esto. Pero bueno, estuve en Panamá, hace unos días en Panamá, y tuvimos una charla muy difícil con una asociación importante.
He confirmed that he's not going to fight until the September 15th. He's going to wait for the winner. I just want to ask him again. And, you know, he was talking about what the work that he's doing with the just bringing the message about, you know, domestic violence, speaking against domestic violence and bullying, and he was in Panama recently, you know, talking about that in a conference.
You know, before we let him go, I just got to ask this because, you know, I'm just really curious. He's an advocate of a man that is against women beating. Jose Suleiman took very light of what Floyd Mayweather did. And I don't know if anybody's ever asked him. Maybe somebody has, and I'm a little late on this. But I just want to know his thoughts about that how Jose Suleiman really he was very light about it and said that's not the biggest crime is to hit a woman.
Bueno, él está diciendo que tú llevas el mensaje de vas en contra de la violencia a la mujer y que José Suleiman hizo un comentario sobre Floyd Mayweather con lo que pasó con su ex. Dijo que, bueno, que eso no era un crimen tan grave, y yo quería saber tu opinión sobre esa opinión que dio.
Oh, sí, bueno, creo que lo dije en su momento, fue a finales de diciembre del año pasado. Creo que fue un error de su parte. Y de hecho, luego, Suleiman dijo que fue una equivocación o una mala interpretación. Pues no lo veo de otra forma. Creo que fue una equivocación la que tuvo. Y bueno, pues es algo que en su momento lo dije y no lo compartí para nada, ¿sabes? O sea, no compartía para nada la opinión que dio.
He said it was definitely a mistake, but he understands that Suleiman, after he made that comment, came back and said that you know, it was misinterpreted and that, you know, it was kind of lost in translation. And obviously, he doesn't share that same sentiment. But he does believe that it was just a mistake.
Unfortunately, Jose Suleiman always says that nobody interprets what he says correctly, or he calls you racist. Sergio Martinez, thank you again. Gracias otra vez para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros, Gabriel Montoya, David Duenas, and Leaving the Ring. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure. We have to do it soon and continue winning. And I can't wait to see you get in the ring with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Bueno, dice que ha sido un placer tenerte otra vez en el programa y que siga ganando y siga siendo campeón y que no podemos esperar para ver esa grande pelea contra Chávez, ojalá que sea Chávez y que sea que vuelva muy pronto.
Bueno, muy bien, muchas gracias y nada, estamos en contacto cuando quieran hablar y un placer hablar con ustedes. Muchas gracias, un saludo y un abrazo para todos.
Thank you for having him and it's been a pleasure.
Well, there you go.
Gracias, campeón.
Gracias mucho. And don't be stealing my body next time, man. Just got to let them know that, though.
Well, thank you so much, Sergio. Thank you very much.
George Jimenez, thank you again. Sergio Martinez, the middleweight champion of the world, with us, that just finished up the interview with us here on Leaving the Ring. George Jimenez from Noche de Boxeo. Thank you again, brother. You know, he came on the fly right away with us when I told him. And, you know, George has covered Sergio for quite some time in Atlantic City. But we got to get our next guest on with us here on Leaving the Ring. George, thank you again, brother.
No problem, bro.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Really appreciate it.
Anytime.
George is the man. He's the man of the man. He's the man with a plan with a microphone. No, with a camera in his hand. There you go. He's the man with a plan with a camera in his hand. Thank you, George.
All right, guys.
Let's talk to the man that's going to be facing Jermaine Taylor. He's our next guest, I believe. How you doing, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
I'm good, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. So you're getting Jermaine Taylor. It's on what? Showbox, right?
Yep, Showbox Friday, April 20th.
April 20th. Let me ask you your thoughts. Because if I remember correctly, we were supposed to get Brandon Gonzalez first off, but he had an injury or something like that, and the fight had to be postponed. Well, not postponed. It was called off. So
yeah. You
were getting a prospect. Now you're getting an ex-champion. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I was originally scheduled to fight Gonzalez January 20th, and he had to pull out. Due to injury. I think he hurt his hamstring or something like a week before the fight. So I just stayed in shape and waited for the next opportunity. And this came up. Actually, they had offered me the first Taylor comeback fight. And we didn't take it because I didn't know what Taylor was going to show up. You know, I wanted to get a look at him after his 2-year layoff. Got a chance to see the film against Niklo, and then they offered the fight again. So I thought it was the right time to beat a former world champ, man.
If you're just joining us, we're here with Caleb Trow, who will be taking on former middleweight champion Jermaine Taylor on Showbox at the Beau Rivage Resort. Is it Trax? Am I mispronouncing
it? Truax, just like it's spelled. Just like it's spelled. Yeah.
It's not French. Okay. We'll actually say the X. Truax, who will be fighting at the Beau Rivage Casino and Resort and Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi. That'll be on 420 this year, 2012. I'm Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing, Leaving in the Ring. Welcome to the show, Caleb, first off.
Thanks, Gabe.
My pleasure. I'm excited about this. I talked to some guys. Talked to a guy that I believe actually you fought in the amateurs, Eric Polnett. And he talked to me a bit about you. He says you've never been hurt that he's ever seen, and that you've never been knocked down. Is that true?
Yeah, I haven't yet. You know, eventually every boxer gets hurt, every boxer gets knocked down, but I want to avoid that as long as possible, man. But I don't think I've never faced anybody that hits like Jermaine Taylor, so if he does connect, I'll be ready for it, though.
And you have an interesting background. Tell us first how you got involved in boxing, and then we'll get to the kind of footnote that happened within your amateur career. I find this interesting. How did you first start?
As a kid, I always was interested in boxing. I always watched fights on TV and all that. But in Minnesota, you know, it's not that publicized, not a very mainstream sport back here. So I didn't know it was available to kids. So I was a baseball and a football player, and actually I didn't get started until I was about 19. I just kind of fell into it, man. I was reading a local newspaper, and they had an ad about a tough man tournament, and decided that would be fun, and tried it out and liked it, and I was good at it, so we just stuck with it, man.
That tough guy competition is the thing that ended up kind of coming back to bite you in the ass as an amateur, right?
Yeah, exactly, man. It was crazy because I it was a tournament that I didn't. It was just at like a local bar, man. Nothing like organized, nothing like that. You know, it was just. There was no prize money, no nothing. It was just like a type of thing where it was just for fun, you know. I had no idea that you weren't eligible to be an amateur if you had fought in a tough man. After I fought two tough mans, and then after that I had about 35 or 40 amateur fights and went to some national tournaments, stuff like that. And it came to light that I fought in. A tough man to begin my career, and so they kind of booted me out of the amateurs, and I wasn't ready to stop, so I decided to turn pro, man.
You know what's funny is that you find Andy Cole, who's the guy that fought like Andre Ward, and I believe that he dropped Andre Ward if I remember correctly. And you when you get split decision, I mean you fought some guys there that have quality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even when Brandon, who he's a good friend of mine, when I heard that match was being made up, I honestly thought, well, man, this is a tough fight. This is a pick 'em fight. You know, they went from Ossie Duran to you now. You know, that to me was like, we talk about matchmaking, and you know, like Donnell Livingston, who's another good friend of ours, this guy's been matched just terrible, mm-hmm. well, not terrible, but hard with Boxing 360, and it looks like Brandon Gonzalez doing it. Now, you're getting the shot now after Andy Cole,
mm-hmm.
which is, it was a split decision. You're getting Jermaine Taylor.
It was a bogus split decision. I'll just put that up.
And you know what's funny is that, I've heard from a lot of folks that, because, you know, when I did announce that you're going to be on, a lot of people were like, you know what, man, that was a BS split decision that from Minnesota. They're like, you know, it wasn't. It was far from it. You're getting Jermaine Taylor.
Yeah.
But there are some folks that are feeling that, you know, Jermaine, like myself, doesn't belong back into that ring. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously tough. Tell anybody that not to do what they love doing. If I was him, if it was me that had a bleeding on my brain, I probably wouldn't step back in the ring because it's a risk. But like I said, I'm not going to be the man to tell him he can't do what he wants to do. So if he wouldn't have decided to get back to the ring, I wouldn't have this opportunity. So I'm grateful for that, man.
But let me. I mean, the thing is that is. If you're outside of the ring, I mean, obviously you got to do what you got to do. You know, this is your job and stuff. You know, what do you think about this guy? You know, being knocked out before that, where possibly this guy can get hurt. Do you Do you kind of let back off on not hurting the guy? Do you let him cruise through because he's an ex-champion and there's a possibility you may damage him permanently for the rest of his life? Or do you say, you know what, man, this is a fight game. They put him in front of me and I got to do my job.
I'll be honest with you, man. I'm trying to knock him out in the first round. You know what I mean? I hope that something isn't the same as it used to be with him, because I'm going to take advantage of him, man. It's like you said, they're putting him in front of me, and it's my job to deal with the task at hand. And if that means knocking him out in the first round because he doesn't have a chin anymore, then so be it. If it means going 10 rounds with him and winning that way, then that's what it is, you know.
I'm curious, because you said that before that you had offered the fight and you wanted to see what Taylor was going to show up. Give me your assessment of what you think of that you're seeing. But two, do you think the unknown was going to be that dangerous? And do you think it's almost more dangerous to have let him, you know, get his feet under him and get a fight in? Should you have nipped him in the bud earlier? I guess we'll find out after the fight. But break down what you see.
That's a good question. I thought about that too. After I accepted this fight, like maybe I should have jumped on him early and taken the fight that Nick Lowe eventually had taken. But I think it worked out well for me, because I'm a thinking fighter. You know, I like to counter. I like to box. Now I have tape to see what mistakes he's making and see just take advantage of things that I know I can take advantage of. So that will be beneficial to me. I think, as far as waiting one fight to see what he had.
Kind of looks like the same old Taylor, only maybe a little slower. Would you agree? Kind of
big
defense.
He looked a little rusty, and he might shake that rust off against me. I'm preparing for the Taylor that beat Bernard Hopkins, but at the same time he was falling in a lot. He just makes mistakes that I know I can take advantage of, as far as bringing his jab back low, things like that, and that's what my job is come April 20th, man. I'm fully prepared for the world champion Jermaine Taylor that was undisputed middleweight champ. So if he's not that fighter anymore, good for me. If he is, then that's what I'm gonna have to deal with.
He's the house fighter in a sense. You know, they're bringing him back on Showtime. He's got Al Haymon behind him, very influential manager, advisor. Do you got to knock him out or knock him down to win this fight?
I hope not, man. I hope the judges would give me a fair shake, and if I box his head off for 10 rounds, I hope they'd give me my fair due. But we've seen some crazy decisions in the past, man. So I know boxing doesn't get that rap for no reason. I'll tell you that much.
At least you're not in Texas, man.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah, good thing it's not in Texas. So do you train? You know, because I know you said, you know what, I'm going to knock him out. I'm hoping to knock him out. So you train for the knockout, but at the same time, do you train and maybe get the best of Jermaine that has the jab, which is not a very good jab. I've always said it's a very amateur jab. It's like a jackknife type of jab. And if it does go to decision, bro, do you sit there, do you look at your corner and go, man, oh, man. There might be some sympathy here. There might be like, come on, really? What do you think?
I mean, well, first of all, I'm not training for the knockout. I'm training to go 10 rounds. If the knockout comes, it comes. You know what I mean? I'm not the biggest one punch knockout puncher to begin with, but I got enough power to keep people honest. But as far as the decision goes, you know, I hope it doesn't come to that. But that's going to be in the back of my mind, because he's the star. He's the favorite, you know, and hopefully, like I said, they give me my fair shake, man.
You know, he was a little disrespectful in his last fight, you know what I mean? He was, like, kind of being real, I don't know why, but he was, like, angry.
After seeing it after the bell a couple times, man, he had to do with the shot late, and was, I don't know, he had a little chip on his shoulder or something, I don't know.
Yeah, and even the last guy that he fought, you know, which is, let me get his name really quick because, you know,
Jesse Nicklow.
Yeah, Jesse Nicklow. I mean, he even cussed at the guy, you know,
yeah.
The mic wasn't on him, but you saw his lips and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was almost like he was inviting the guy to knock him out. Like, you know, the guy wasn't doing enough for him. What do you think? Do you think that's a little bit of a mind game, you know what I mean, where the to make the guy think that, you know, to make him think that he's back, to make him think that his chin's okay. If he does that to you, what do you think? Does it take you out of your game plan, or does it kind of make you feel, you know what, this is why they picked you, because you don't have a lot of KOs?
Man, I hope he invites me to hit him, man. I'll I'll take that shot if you're going to give me a free shot at him, that's for damn sure. But I think he's just trying to psych himself up or give himself a little confidence or something, man. But if he invites a free shot at me, I'll damn sure take it.
Do you cuss him back, man? Do you throw that in another? You know, if he cusses you out in the ring, do you throw it right back at him?
Oh yeah, for sure, man. I'm not a brash trash talker or anything like that. But I can talk with the best of them, man. You get me going, I'll definitely give it back. I'm not gonna start nothing, but I'll give it back, man.
Being where you're from. How important is it
for this fight?
Being where you're from, how important is it for your fight fans that are out there that are supporting you?
I think it's real important because Minnesota kind of gets a bad rap because we haven't had much success on the road lately, and I guess people just it's just not respected as a fight city. You know what I mean, I want to put it back on the map as far as a place where we go out and get respect from New York and Philly and Vegas and California. I want to show people that there are people that can box and fight here in Minnesota, and I'm one of them, you know what I mean?
Other than his vast experience, you know, he's been in with, you know, all the top guys. He's been Winky Wright, Hopkins twice, the list goes on. Is that the main thing that he brings to the table that you've not seen, is a guy that experienced?
He's definitely the best opponent I've ever had. That's for sure, man. I'm not gonna beat around the bush or lie to myself. You know, he's a former world champ. He's got the experience. He's fast. He can hit hard. I feel like I'm ready, man. I fought some decent competition coming up in my 19 fights. I'm a smart fighter. I got good defense. I can punch a little bit. And I feel like I'm ready, man. I want to see what I got. I want to show people that I can fit in on the world class level. And hopefully this one will lead to bigger fights, man.
One of our off of our Twitter feed, one of our listeners wants to know this, and I'm very curious about this as well. This is at Sweet Boxing, Ryan Bivens on Twitter. He wants to know, what do you think about Kerry Hope's win over Gregor's Proxa, if you've seen it? Because you've beaten Kerry Hope.
I actually watched it live. I keep in contact with Kerry Hope on Twitter, and he was a good guy. Actually, it was strange because how our fight came about. I was actually in camp with him in Big Bear, like 2 weeks before our fight. And I was supposed to fight, I think, Carl Daniels, and something happened, and the opponent fell out, and I ended up fighting Gary Hope, and it was strange that I just got done training for 2 weeks with him, you know, for every single day for 2 weeks. But it's inspiring, man. He was a big time underdog, and he got it done, you know. Yeah.
That's like you're talking about kind of raising up your city, and here's a guy, Gary Hope, that. No one gave him any hope of winning this thing. And, you know, just kind of, from, you know, an obscure dude from kind of a town I can't even pronounce. And he pulls it out. That's pretty awesome. That's interesting that you guys trained together.
It's inspiring. You know, it was inspiring. I sent him a message as soon as I watched it and said I'm going to use that for inspiration in my training to knock off – Taylor from his pedestal. So it was cool to see him get that win. And also it boosts my resume a little bit, you know what I mean? So I was cheering for him, man.
It sure does. All of a sudden that Kerry Hope win looks really good on your resume. I'm curious, too, but I guess that does make you – we were talking about this earlier on the show. I'm curious what you think about it because you're a guy that's on the cusp. You know, you've got 19 fights, and you're on the cusp of a big win if you can get this done. Do you think we anoint people too soon or throw people on the scrap heap too soon? Because, you know, here we had, like, Linares get stopped last week. Everybody was talking about how great he was going to be. And Kerry Hope is a guy that nobody gave any hope. Jermaine Taylor, the guy that kind of burned out quick, and now he's coming back. What do you think about that? Do you think that we're too critical because guys fight too seldom these days?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. And being a person that started boxing late, that's something I always thought about because I was a football player and a baseball player growing up, and you know, you get one loss in boxing and your career is over. You know, that's what all the analysts say and stuff like that. And that's kind of a weird dynamic between MMA and boxing because you see guys with 8 losses fighting for titles all the time in MMA and boxing. Like I said, you get 1 or 2 losses and people think your career is done and you still might be a good fighter. You know, it's just like you said, people get matched wrong and people fight guys that are easy. You know, coming up for 20 fights and they get their shot. So it's just kind of a goofy deal in the sport of boxing.
The weirdest sport there is, in my opinion.
And we cover it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'm in it, man. I participate.
Yeah, that's for sure, man.
You know, like there'll be like a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old going, you know, they're training in the gym. I'm going to turn amateur. I want to be a fighter. And I always, you know, I don't want to step on anybody's dream, particularly a kid, you know. You smile and you nod and you go,
yeah,
yeah,
you
man,
do. That's why you tell them, well, get in the ring. He's the kind of guy, get in the ring, let's do it right now. Me and you, we'll duke it out.
12-year-old. I always kind of wonder, like, why? You know, like, my number one question in my mind is, why would you want to do this job?
Gabe, you're trying to get in this right now, a co-host from another radio show that's only 9 years old, in the ring. Come on.
That's true. That is true. I'm curious, so why, you know, why do this? Why take punches in the face and body for money, for a living? I mean, is there something that we just can't touch and understand that drives you to this?
I think it is, man. You know what I mean? I get asked that question probably more often than most because I finished my 4 years of college. I have a college degree, and people ask me all the time, you know, what the hell are you doing, man? You got your degree. Why don't you just go move on with your career? Why you want to get punched in the face for a living? And I just love it, man. I was just telling somebody this the other day. It's the competitive drive in me. It's just waking up every day, running, working out, doing everything, man. I just love everything about it, and it's not like I need to do it. You know, I don't need to box if I don't want to, but I just love to do it. And one thing that kind of irks me, a lot of guys they say, you know, I do this for this person or that person, or I do it for this and that. And I've always respected Carl Frost because he kind of shares the same view as me. He's like, I do this for me, man. I do it because I want to be the best. I don't do it for nobody else. If you box for somebody else, you're crazy. You're taking punches in the face for somebody else. Who's worth getting seriously hurt or dying for? You know what I mean? I do this for me. I do it because I love to do it, and that's where it stops. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely, brother. Hey, man, again, thanks. And can you throw out really quick Facebook or Twitter for fight fans that want to follow you and know a little bit more about you, man?
Yeah, for sure. On Facebook, you can hit me at just Caleb Truex. And Twitter, I just started the Twitter thing, man. I'm new to the Twitter, so look me up at Golden Caleb T, man. Hit me up. I gotta get my followers up. I'm looking kind of weak right now in the follower department.
Caleb T right here with us on Leaving the Ring. Hey, follow us back here on Leaving the Ring, brother. We'll definitely try to get you some more fight fans to
no doubt, man.
man. Hey, thanks again, man. I mean, hey, all class, bro. And we're going to be rooting for you. We're going to be rooting for you against your fight with Jermaine Taylor.
All right, man. You got that. I mean, I'm back on the week after I take this little victory home, man.
We do, right, man. Huh? We do, man. But absolutely. And I'll text you my cell phone number, you know, so that we can get you on the magazine as well, bro. And we can keep in touch, man, regardless, whatever. Okay, brother?
All right, fellas. Have a good night, man.
You too.
Yep. Bye.
Khalil Trax right there with us on Leaving the Ring, having this fight with Jermaine Taylor. Call in if you want to tell us your thoughts and what you think. What's going to happen when they meet in the ring? I don't know.
That's going to be interesting. I think every fight now with Jermaine Taylor is going to be interesting just because you don't know.
So do.
Yeah,
but
you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but I'm going to pick Khalil, man. I got to pick him. I think he can beat him.
I don't know. I'm still kind of looking at the fight. With Taylor, it is kind of interesting. Like he even said, it's like I kind of wanted to watch what version of Jermaine Taylor shows up. And I thought he looked good, but I thought he looked like Taylor. You know, he looks the same. He boxed a little smarter, kind of used more of his experience to kind of relax, and he didn't seem as tense. But still kind of ordinary. In a lot of ways, you know. So I'm really curious at this fight. And I'm curious, like, I liked how honest Truax was in that he's like, look, I'm not a one-punch knockout power, but I hit you enough to keep you honest, hit hard enough to keep you honest. And
I don't know. I'm not sold on it yet. I'm just not. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't have a pick. I mean, that's...
I like Khalib in this fight. I think that Khalib is a really tough kid. Even when Brandon Gonzalez after with the, Ozzy Duran, I thought it was going to be a really tough fight for him. It was a pick-em fight for me. But find out to see. I was with Rodney Hernandez just this past week, who's helping out Chaz Witherspoon, who's going to be fighting Seth Mitchell on HBO. And got to tell you, man, looking good. Now,
I like the things I'm hearing out of that camp, man. You know, he's got a whole new program. He's working on things. They're working with Conte. They understand his nutrition. They've got Virgil Hunter in the mix there. He's working as his trainer. I think Chaz is an interesting guy. He's got a lot of experience. He's got the tools. He's got the ability, I think.
I think they got the right sparring partner, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, Rodney Hernandez, which, you know, I'm going to throw up some of the stuff that he's done. Give me like a day or so. And he was on Showbox. He was on the Guillermo Reggaeton versus Rico Ramos. So you can probably find it on the Goose and Tudor YouTube. And he fought a prospect out of Russia that was under the tutelage of James Toney. And he gave James Toney's prospect a lot of fits, man. I got to tell you. This guy is a light version of Krista Nightmare Oyela. Comes forward, but the only thing, there's a little difference. Not as big as Chris. Not, I know some folks are like, oh, he's not like a big fat guy. No, I'm not saying that. And what I mean in height, and in, well, yeah, of course, in size. You know, he's only, I believe he told me he was only like maybe breaking 210. But the mentality is to knock you out. Big Mexican kid, Rodney Hernandez, out of Bat to the Bones gym in Modesto, California. And I had the pleasure to seeing him. He did lose the fight with the James Toney prospect, but he gave him a hell of a fight. And I even told him when I saw him, and I'm going to get him on. I got to get him on. You know why? Just to talk about the Chaz Witherspoon. So I'll get his trainer, which is, you know, from Bat to the Bones, and himself. And I told him, I said, I thought that if you would have paced yourself, that's the key word in boxing, pace yourself. Be explosive, but pace yourself. So that means that if you got a 10-round fight, fight 40 rounds. If you got a 12-round fight, you know, just multiply that. You got to do that. That's what boxing is about. Boxing, look, real fighters and intelligent fighters, they want to drag you into the deep waters. They don't want to put you into the blue water. The blue water is what you can see the fishes, you know, swimming by your legs and nibbling at your knees. They want to swing you in where the sharks, the mucky water, where you can't see them, where they can just take a hold of you and you could be a soul surfer. Pretty sure a lot of you have seen that. The chick with the arm missing because she got bitten by a shark because she was a surfer. That's what real fighters want to do. They want to drag you into that water, right, Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You know, they're it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm looking at the fight schedule and just upcoming stuff. But I think with Taylor, you know, he's almost like a Linares in the sense that he's just been knocked out. But he's the kind of guy that you almost want to jump on him early and rattle his ass, you know, get to that chin fast and make him fight at a fast pace. I think the problem that Nicklo had was, well, you know, he wasn't quite on that level, but not even close. But it was these guys kind of stop and watch rather than, like, what Sergio Thompson did was, like, he didn't treat Jorge Linares like Jorge Linares. He treated him like, you know, just any other guy and, like, went right at him, showed him no respect. It almost cost him. He got hurt early, but he fought through it and he got the win. I think, you know, with Truax, you know, from what I understand, he's more of a counterpuncher. He's more of a thinking boxer. I'm not sure if that's the best approach with a guy like Jermaine Taylor, who's going to want to pace himself, take his time. Like you said, I think you got to just rip into him and push him and make him take him out of his envelope. He's never really done the war thing very well, in my opinion. So I would almost take him there. But Truax is also a guy, like you said, he's going to find out a lot about himself. There's still questions. That's why I can't outright pick him just yet, because I don't know quite enough about him at this level. You know, what happens, you know, when they go to war. And I think that translates right over same themes in the Seth Mitchell-Chaz Witherspoon fight, where you've got a guy that's, you know, Witherspoon, he's battle-tested, he's lost, but he's got that experience. And he was one of the first fighters I was covering as a writer. We would talk kind of late at night, and that was the one thing that always struck me about him, was he was a very intelligent guy. And the reports in camp that I'm getting is that he's, you know, they kind of show him something once or twice, and boom, he gets it. And not only does he get it, but he buys into everything. He wants a new system. He wants a new approach to this thing. And is very open to it. And because of that, he's being very successful in camp. Like you said, they got the right sparring partner, the right mentality. And in front of them, they've got Seth Mitchell, who is, I think, a very good prospect. You know, but he's kind of a project prospect. You know, he's a guy that came over from football, came over late. They're slowly building him and putting things together with him. He doesn't move his head very much. We haven't seen him in a war. We don't really know what that chin is quite like just yet. At the world-class level, and we haven't seen him been taken deep by somebody who's experienced and been there before and can really dig into him and attack him. I'm curious. I mean, Witherspoon's problem has been that he goes to war a little bit too much, like he did with Chris Areola. So he's going to have to balance it out, particularly early. But I'm really curious about that fight. I mean, there's like the Truax and Taylor fight is very interesting to me, and this fight is very interesting to me. They're real fights. And dudes could lose, and it's just really, I cannot wait. You know, that fight really, not a lot of people are talking about it, but I really think Witherspoon versus Seth Mitchell is an excellent fight.
Love that fight. Hey, let's get our next guest on. Tony Lewis of the WBC Continental Americas, 140th champion, and also known as the Goodwill Ambassador. What's up, brother? You're on live with us right now on Leaving the Ring.
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic, man. The Lightning of Cornwall, Ontario, Canada. Hey, talk to us a little bit about this, of what you're doing. You got 13-0 with 5 knockouts, but yeah. They're calling you the Goodwill Ambassador. Why is that?
Yeah, that's fairly fresh. That just recently happened over the course of last weekend. My agent, Matt Yanofsky, got in touch with the chairman of that. The WBC has a youth program they called World Boxing Cares, and their site is worldboxingcares.com. And it pretty much is, you know, fighters and different representatives of WBC, whether it be judges, officials, on top of any belt holders that pretty much travel around and go to different, you know, boys and girls clubs around Canada or the States or high schools, this and that, just talking to kids, telling them their story and, you know, motivational speaking pretty much, you know.
So let me ask you, what puts you into that category? I mean, 24 years old, I mean, you obviously have to have a story, somebody that cares, but when you somebody that cares about something like that, there's got to be a reason behind it, right?
No, of course. You know, everyone's got their own story. I have mine. When I was, I guess the biggest thing was about 4 years ago, roughly. I lost my mother, September 23rd, 2008, and that was just. I buried her 5 days before one of my fights. That would have been my third professional fight around then, and that was obviously one of the lowest point of. My life, one of the toughest things I had to go through and really show my grit and be a professional very early in my career. And so obviously I've taken that along with, you know, and as a teenager also, I went through my own rough patch where I hit a phase where I didn't want to, you know, I wasn't on the straight and narrow, and I got into a bad crowd for a little while. And so now today I'm working with youth, you know, my day job, whenever I'm not boxing, I'm juggling a boxing career and a career as a drug and alcohol counselor for teenagers.
Now, when you talk about some of the triumphs that you've done in your youth and all that, and you're talking to kids about drugs and alcohol, is that something that was part of your life when you were a kid, or was this the parents or siblings or something?
No, I was just, you know what, My father has been my trainer from day one, and when I got into my late teens, it started to wear thin for a little while. The father-son relationship, I think, it got to both of us. The pressure and this and that, as my amateur career was elevating, you know, and things started getting more serious, and kind of the friction and that caught up to us a little bit, you know, like because I see him every night at the gym, and then, you know, we'd go home together too. So it was boxing in every facet of our life. You know, there was always boxing was at the head of the discussion, and it was a bit of a strain on our family as well. You know, my mother and, you know, my little sister and that growing up all under the same roof. So for a little while, it kind of got to me, and I rebelled and went another way for a little while. And, you know, I experimented with drugs, and I dabbled in alcohol for a while, you know, a little bit more excessively than I should have, but it's a story with a happy ending though, because I got through it and I got back on track because of my love for the game. And and you know what, my dad and I, you know what, we sometimes we fight, but at the end of the day we love each other and we have each other's backs, and there's no one else that I would trust more to have in my corner.
Now, when you say your dad and I are, you know, your dad and your, I mean, we all. I know what that means, you know. I've had a roller coaster, you know, what you would call it, with my father. You know, my dad was an alcoholic, a womanizer, a guy that, you know, we just have a lot of problems with, you know. And
yeah.
Even with this, when people ask me, so how are you? When people come up to me, they go, so how are you and your dad doing?
Yeah. Oh no, I would say good. I would say, and the people that, you know, me and my dad, we have, you know, sometimes we put on a good little show at the gym. You know, sometimes we, when it gets closer to training camp, especially, you know, when he gets the jitters, sometimes I think more than I do. You know, whenever a fighter gets a little crusty, the final days leading up to a fight from cutting weight and this and that, he kind of gets that way too. So sometimes we're not always the easiest guys to get along with each other. And, the guys at the gym are used to it now. They laugh. They think it's funny. We're not laughing, but they do. But at the end of the day, we're tighter than ever. That was one thing as far as alcoholism and womanizing and that. I never had to worry about any of those things with my father. With me and my father, it's your typical. You know, he's a slave driver, and he pushes me harder than the rest. And he'll always find the negatives. A lot of times before he finds the positives, and me as the fighter, it's hard because I always I'm always giving it my 100% night in, night out. But some nights, you know, especially whenever you're training twice a day, you know, 6 days a week, your 100% on Monday won't always be what your 100% is on Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But Father wants the best. He wants to see it, you know, close to perfection, if not perfection, you know, every time, no excuses. Doesn't matter what you went through, earlier during the day or what you did for training in the morning. When he sees you at the gym at night, you know what I mean? It's that's all. And it's also, you know, sometimes it's, you know, I've gone through that phase too, where I'm 24 now and I want to be my own man and this and that and think for myself. And sometimes, you know, dads out of their love and passion, but they still see you and treat you sometimes as their little boy. And that's always, but I think that's any father-son relationship, that's going to be a struggle right up until, you know, it's like whenever you're in your 40s, you go and visit your parents in your 40s and they still treat you like their little boy or little girl. You know, you're always going to be that in their eyes. And that's just something that we have to deal with. And we have been successfully.
Absolutely. Fair enough. Fair enough answer. Absolutely. You know, 13-5, 5 KOs. Nickname is Lightning.
Yes.
Tony, where's the Thunder at?
Oh, well, the Thunder's been coming along. If you were to look at my record and do some research, it'd be the Thunder's been coming around within the last year or so. I've been is where I've scored the majority of my stoppages. So it was a slow transition from the pros. What I brought to the pro game early was a lot of speed, a lot of combinations, and volume punching. And the power was secondary. Now the power is starting to come to the forefront more as I continue to grow and develop. But one of the things I always live by, though, is that lightning strikes, thunder just makes noise. So I still abide by that rule.
I like that answer. And you know, when you said that, you know, if you looked at your record or did some research, I did do some research on you. But I'm going to tell you this. Right. On the 10th, I mean, we're talking about in the 2011. What happened? Why haven't you fought? I mean, we're in 2012. On April. Why haven't you fought?
Because at the time I was going through some issues with my old promoter, Groupie Bo Michel. Basically, this came down to money. He started cutting off a lot of the guys on his roster that were under contract. Not cutting them off, but he lost one of our bigger sponsors, where he was able to hold the shows, monthly shows at the casino in Montreal. When he lost that venue, his number of shows got cut in half, you know, based on an annual basis. So a lot of guys, you know, there was me and a handful of guys that got put on the shelf for months at a time, and we were on a rotation as far as who would get through, you know, and only the headliners, like guys like a Jean Pascal and this and that were you know, so whenever Jean Pascal would fight, that's when some of us would get a chance. But then what happened was, once a guy like Pascal and this and that starts raking in the big numbers, you know, six-figure
right.
paydays and that, the budget started getting a lot tighter with some of us other guys that were coming up, you know, as prospects and that. So he just, you know, just remaining inactive, and we weren't fighting enough, not what the contract called for. So I had to move on, and I had to terminate the contract and move on with my career if I wanted to continue to develop and build, you know. Because what he's doing is a lot of times now, the way this guy's filling his undercards is he's bringing in guys independent guys with other managers that are covering their expenses. So he saves a buck. So then the guys that are signed that he has to pay aren't fighting. So guys that are signed are hurting. Because guys from outside, from other management or promotional teams, are the ones that are getting showcased on your shows. So that's why I was inactive, and that's why I've moved on. And now we got fights lined up again, and we're exercising some other options, and things are on the up and up again, thankfully.
Great. I'll pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya for Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring.
Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you.
Let's get into your fight. You're fighting here on the 7th, 2 days from now, at the, I'm going to totally mispronounce this, the Claude Robillard Center in Montreal, Quebec, Canada.
Yeah.
You're fighting Frank Szabo. What do you know
yes.
about this guy?
I know that he fought, I know as an amateur he was a national champion for quite some time, and He's got he brings a lot of experience to the table. He doesn't have the prettiest record, you know. It's basically a 50-50 record, but he's still pushing, you know, 30 plus fights. He's pushing on almost 40 fights, so which is double the amount of pro experience I have. So that's you know, win or lose, you know, 40 fights is 40 fights in comparison to my 14th. So what I'm looking at is a seasoned, battle-tested veteran, a fairly young veteran too, because he's not much older than me. I don't think he's more than 26 or 27. But what that tells me, when I look at his record, he's fought a lot of guys with winning records too. He's been match tough from day one of his career. So, and he's always proven to be a game opponent, win or lose. So that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting a strong, aggressive fighter who's been there before, who's fought countless of prospects like me coming up. And so I don't think it's a territory where he hasn't been before.
It is kind of a trip. You look at his record and you wonder, who is this guy's matchmaker? I mean, like his first four fights, he fought guys who were like 2-0. He opened up against two 2-0 guys, lost those. They put him in with an 0-1, then right back to a 2-0. I mean, they matched this guy incredibly hard right from the very start. So it is interesting. Yep. I mean, I normally would look at this and go, it's a full-on, you know, mismatch. This guy's got a lot of red, you know, if you're looking at BoxRec, a lot more
That's
red
right.
than green. But that is interesting that you look at it and say, he's not losing to guys that are crappy. He's fighting guys with a lot of experience. There's a guy that's like, you know, 49-6. I mean, it's an opponent, but at the same time, you're 12-5. Or, I'm sorry, 13-5. You're a prospect at this point. And this is kind of...
Well, 13-0 with 5 KOs.
Yeah, 13-0 with 5 KOs, rather. And this is the kind of thing that you feed a guy your size. You want to get that experience. There's a guy with over 40 fights. He's going to show you some things that you've probably never seen before, you know, so in terms of experience. What is your game plan with a guy like this? Do you kind of feel him out, wait him out, or do you try to jump on him early?
It all depends what he brings. To be honest, you know, we always the game plan with this guy, because I haven't been able to see some tape of him and what he presents, and that's when I realized, hey, you know what, I can't go just by the numbers with this guy, because when I saw some footage of him, I said, you know what, this guy knows how to fight, and he's strong, he's fit, and he's aggressive. This guy definitely likes to load up on the hook. And he's willing to take one to give one on the way in and mix it up, give the fans a show, which is perfect, because really this guy, his style should bring out the best assets in my style, because I really do relish in a guy that likes to mix it up and come forward, because for me, it just allows more openings for me to showcase my speed and run him into shots. So I'm definitely planning on nullifying his left hook and working the jab over time and bringing in my own body punches and left hooks into the fight whenever it calls for it. So I'm going to box him early and see how he responds to the jab. And once I start putting some hurt on him, I'm going to get to work and open up. That could happen in 3 or 4 rounds, or it could happen in 7 or 8. It all depends on the flow of the fight and how in good of condition he is himself.
Well, I wish you all the best, man, and really thank you for coming on the show. We're up against it. You're only got
Thanks for having
left.
Me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Good luck.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, man. Nope. Wish you all the luck, brother. Thank you very much.
Lot, take care, guys. Ciao.
You too. Well, there you go. Tony Lewis, WBC Continental America's 140 champion, the ambassador of the Goodwill ambassador. Good kid, man. I like him. I like his answers. You know, and like you said, with thunder, all it is noise. Don't worry about that. You know, I like that answer. Let's get to our fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring. Mr. Gable Montoya is going to throw out a fight schedule. Gabe, are you ready for that?
I am ready with that.
All right.
April 6th, Friday, 2012, at the Korakuen Hall in Tokyo, Japan. Shinsuke Yamanaka. 15-0-2 versus Vic Darchinian, 37-4-1.
You've been waiting to say that for a while, haven't you?
I have. I've been practicing. I actually screwed up Truax's. I was stealing your act tonight. I screwed up his last name, but I get that one right. So the WBC Bantamweight belt. Underneath that is Takahiro Ayo, 22-2-1 versus Turdsack.
Wow.
Koki Jim, 46-3-1 for the WBC Junior Lightweight Belt. Hizumi Hasegawa, 29-4 versus Felipe Felix, 18-0, rounds out that card. I'm just going to fly through them because we got like 7 minutes. At the Doubletree Hotel in Ontario, California, Darley Perez, 24-0 versus Elaine Hernandez, 18-9-2. Jose Reynoso, 15-3-1 versus James Hope, 6-9-1. Not a lot of hope there. Jonathan Arellano, 11-0-1 versus Jose Cota, 8-6, rounds out that card. I think I'm actually going to be there for that one. Kind of excited. At the Orion Function Center in Campsie, Australia, Paul Fleming is a nice prospect. 13-0 versus Hui Jong Kim, 4-3. So that's a little bit of a feeding frenzy there. April 7th on Saturday, 2012, at the Oasis Hotel in Cancun, Mexico, Humberto Soto, 57-7-2 versus Claudine Lacerda, 14-2. Edgar Sosa versus Wilbert Wiener Cab, 33-6-1, is also on the card. This is really the fight everybody's been waiting for. At the Landers Center in South Haven, Mississippi, James Tony, 73-7-3 versus Bobby Gunn, 21-4-1. I know you're excited about that fight. Any picks on that one? No?
You know what?
just want to keep moving.
I'm just going to keep moving.
Yeah. Later on in that evening, I just jumped off the schedule. At the Phoenix Club in Anaheim, California, that's actually probably one I'm going to be going to. Telefutura, Ronnie Rio, 17-0, taking on Guillermo Sanchez, 13-5-1. Should be an interesting fight. I really like me some Ronnie Rios. I think he's the real deal.
I like him, too. Really like him.
Hugo Centeno, 12-0, versus Gerardo Prieto, 7-12-1. Really nice prospect. A friend of mine, and know him from being around the fights. You should follow him on Twitter. He's actually very funny. He's a young welterweight prospect. We saw him on Fight Night Club last year. Really like me some Hugo. I think he has a lot of potential. I think he needs to harness it a little more, but I think he'll get there. And then at the Claude Robitaille Center in Montreal, Canada, we have Tony Lewis, 13-0, versus Frank Zabo, 14-16-2. And that rounds out your weekend fight schedule. Kind of slim pickings this weekend, but, I mean, we do have that James Toney fight, so thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good thing for him, he's not going to be choked out like a baby seal. And, you know, what can you do? Anyways, we could definitely patch in really quick. We got a few more minutes here, like maybe 3 more minutes here on Leaving the Ring. We got a lot of fight fans on hold. So let's just patch one in really, really quick. Let's patch in Davey Murphy right now wants to talk Jack Lowe. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to tell Jack. I just want to tell Jack Lowe not to let the door hit him in the ass and wonder how he took 2004 National Golden Glove champ Danny Williams and taught him to block a jab with his face. And I also wanted to, real quick, I wanted to say hi to our good friend George Jimenez's fiance, Vicky. It's her birthday tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is her birthday. And she's also a writer for Leaving the Ring.
Right. Very, very nice person.
Yeah, George, so, you know what? She's nice. I don't know about George, though. You know, I don't know. You know, George, he's kind of a jerk.
I have no idea what she sees in him. She's got a few months here to back out of it. So you know, maybe she'll wise up. I don't know.
I know. You know, the chipmunk cheeks just kind of throw me off a little bit about George. But, you know, it's to reach your own.
To be honest, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Yeah. And I give him a hard time, but anyway, I just wanted to say that about Jack Lowe and, you know, have fun in your own little world. He always gets schooled, and I always got tired of his me and we trainer bit, where it was always a team when Kelly was doing good. And then, right. Of course, you know, when things went bad, you know, well, it's Kelly. So I just got a little tired of that.
No,
and Kevin Cunningham had Danny Williams as a pretty good fighter back in the day. And, boy, just looked like crap against Lundy. Just technically, just it's totally different. So I just wanted to get that in real quick. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay,
hey,
no
thanks
problem.
Very much. Thank you. All right, Dave. Thanks very much, man. You take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
There you go. The end of our show on Leaving the Ring. I appreciate everybody that tunes in, calls in, and participates on the show. Don't forget to get your Undisputed Fight magazine. We have the new issue coming out today's here on out there in the digital world. Myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya, and Mr. David Chan, and everybody that's involved in the ring, we all want to thank you always for the support. Everybody have a great night. Don't drink and drive on the weekends.
But during the week, do it as much as you want. All right, Dave. I'll see you next week.
Peace out, brother.